Good evening, councillors, staff, ladies and gentlemen. I declare this briefing session open at 6:32 p.m. The proceedings of the briefing session are electronically recorded and a live broadcast will be provided in line with changes to the city's briefing session procedures adopted by council on 20th of September 2022. Item CJ155-0922 refers, except for matters of a confidential nature. The guide in determining those matters of a confidential nature shall be in accordance with the Local Government Act of 1995. Members of the public gallery are reminded it is a requirement under the Meeting Procedures Local Law 2013 to act in a courteous and respectful manner when in the council chamber. You are asked to show respect to anyone who is exercising their rights to ask questions of the council and or to deliver public statements. I ask that respect extends to such people whenever they are on city premises while waiting for or having taken their opportunity to ask questions or to deliver a public statement. Under the local law, a person must not create a disturbance by interrupting or interfering with the orderly conduct of the proceedings. This includes expressing approval or dissent by conversing or by any other means. I would also like to remind members of the public to show proper respect to the city's elected members and staff during proceedings. The next item on the agenda is declarations of interest. I have two of those before me at the moment. Declaration of interest from Councillor Hamilton Prime. It's an interest that may impact impartiality. This is related to the item 12.5 e-rideables in the City of Joondalup and the extent of interest that Councillor Hamilton Prime owns an e-scooter and is an administrator of the WA Scooter Enthusiasts. I also have a declaration from Councillor Rush Fishwick. It's a declaration of interest that may affect impartiality, and it's with regard to item 12.10, the corporate sponsorship application for swimming from the WA Open Water Swim Series. And the extent of the interest is that Councillor Fishwick is intending to enter in the Open Water Swims. Councillors, are there any other declarations of interest tonight? Yes, Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just doing a declaration for item 12.13, the Joondalup Festival of Motoring, that Justin Hunt is known to me.
Okay, thank you. If you can do the paperwork, please. And any other elected members with declarations of interest? If not, we'll just wait for Councillor Hamilton Prime to complete the paperwork. Thank you. We now move on to deputations. So deputation requests are to be made in writing and addressed to the Mayor. A time of up to 15 minutes is set aside for each deputation. Deputations shall not exceed 5 persons in number, and only 3 of those persons shall be at liberty to address the elected members and to respond to questions that the elected members may have. We have 2 deputations this evening. Can I call forward first, please, Ms. Susan Boylan? This deputation relates to item 12.9, the outcomes of community consultation, environmental strategy 2024 to 2034. Thank you, Ms. Boylan.
Hello, my name is Susan Boylan, 52 Key West Drive, Mullaloo. I'll start with that slide. Thank you very much. I intend to highlight the lightweight response to the acknowledged threat we face due to climate change. That is the Environmental Strategy Draft Plan 224 that will be tabled here tonight. Much of the document outlines what we already know. It states that we have a beautiful natural environment which we care for and protect. It outlines the overwhelming desire for residents to maintain natural areas. It acknowledges the threats to natural environments and the need to protect natural areas from clearing of native vegetation and fragmentation of remaining bushland areas. The goals cover every angle of sustainability, which is economic, social and environment. It talks about resilience, water management and energy-efficient cities. However, the key performance targets are generic in nature and do not necessarily address the goals stated in the strategy. Next slide, please. Let's look at the protection and enhancement of the city's natural areas. There is no mention of the amount of areas of natures that are being maintained and increasing with the restoration efforts. The strategy only targets canopy cover percentage, plants grown in numbers, and condition of vegetation. This is a very narrow view to protection. How much of the natural environment have we lost in the last 5 years? How much has been earmarked for development over the life of this plan? These percentages need to be provided so residents know exactly what has been occurring since the last environmental plan. Counting trees is not a reasonable response to climate change. Next slide, please. It would be great to see some targets on improving fragmentation of ecosystems, noting it's not just trees we need, but whole ecosystems to support species and functioning. There was no mention of protection of wetlands, drying of the peatlands, which are all important to this area. Given the importance of the coast to this region, there are no targets for adaptation and nothing mentioned about maintenance of the dune systems and vegetation in this area, which will help both mitigation, adaptation and protection of ecosystems and biodiversity. This is critical for a strategy to 2034. We do have community groups who engage in maintenance of natural areas and dunes, but they are for the most part volunteers and poorly funded. We know the reaction of the engineering solutions when the Charmer was released, but in 10 years' time, what options will we have left for us? Infrastructure such as groins and seawalls have been shown not to work. Habitat and ecosystem maintenance is a better option in the first instance, but it has to be done now. Next slide, please. Greening of our neighbourhood by planting verge side trees. The idea behind this is supposedly to create an urban forest. However, the very word forest means a variety of vegetation in the specific area, attractive native species and working together to support an ecosystem. Individual trees on verges will not combat rising temperatures. They are simply not resilient enough on their own. And as we have seen, they will struggle to survive climate change-induced events such as drought, flood and heat. Next slide, please. Conserving our natural areas is explained as growing species for revegetation. This, coupled with surveying our current natural areas, means we are only referring to the natural areas we have. What is not said is whether this plan will seek to protect the clearing of any more natural areas for development, so as to maintain as much natural bushland as we can. In essence, there is absolutely no mechanism anywhere in this report to prevent the taking out of natural bushland for development in the next 10 years. An example of this is the dune system along our coastline. In the last few years, we have lost significant bush forever at Ocean Reef. We've built entertainment precinct in Pinneroo. We have earmarked housing developments at Burns Beach, further encroachment at Sorrento and Hillary's, as well as added to the footprint at Whitford's nodes. Next slide, please. What should be planned is pockets of open space being restored to bushland. A good example of this is Corella Park. It is an interwoven ecosystem that will be far more resilient during climate change events. Although the dedicated few who fought to retain this bushland and look after it might tell me that it's also under pressure as it stands alone rather than connected to other similar areas. It does not have connected concrete paths, toilets, skate parks or food outlets. It is a natural urban forest and this type of restoration should be done throughout the suburbs of Joondalup where a percentage of open space could be restored to nature. As we have seen, large areas of natural bushland are far healthier then those have been diminished by infrastructure and severed from the connections to similar ecosystems. They are protected from severe climate events by the fringes of the area. I remember probably 10 years ago planting seeds towards the front of the dunes at North Mullaloo. Those seedlings did not survive. And it's just sand encroaching further towards Oceanside Promenade. What's still hanging in there is the bush behind where we planted. But is there enough of it to survive the next 10 years? Next slide, please. Environmental sustainable design. We aim to integrate principles environmentally sustainable into the design and construction of city-owned buildings through the application of environmentally sustainable designs for the city building policy. While there are some targets for the city of Joondalup, there are none for the community at large. What are the building targets for passive solar design in housing, for infrastructure provision, etc.? It is possible to include cooling and heating requirements for buildings to reduce energy demand. Building design is critical. Again, while there is a focus on offsets for the city of Joondalup's vehicle fleet, there is nothing more broadly about EV charging stations to meet the new demand or encouraging public transport use. It would be fabulous if the city could address this with the state government to get a better public transport within the city to reduce car use. The implication of cycling infrastructure such as pathways, bikes, parking and signage goes a long way to make a truly sustainable city. Planning to build more car spaces, such as what is planned at Merrifield Place, negates this initiative. Education programs are again a great thing, but does not necessarily shift behaviour. More targeted incentives to address energy efficiency, waste, transport, etc. would be welcome in a strategy. Monitoring and collecting waste and waste education programs do not reduce waste. Measuring canopy cover does not increase the natural areas in Joondalup. Green office projects targeting city staff and electric fleet cars for the city does not outline a sustainability plan for all residents of Joondalup. Battery storage on 2 city buildings and solar panels on 19 is not a plan for residents. In fact, most of this section is a plan for buildings in the city of Joondalup and the council itself. Installing LED lights, not particularly effective, and it could be said that it supports driving cars. Without substantive changes in the way we do things, i.e. drive less, make sure all food waste is collected and composted, keep our natural areas, etc., we risk the sustainability paradox. i.e. we fix a few things, like LED lights and solar cells, but we don't address the underlying drivers of climate and environmental change. We could end up driving further, creating more waste and using more energy, all with solar cells and EVs, but resulting in other environmental challenges. Let's be truly sustainable, where economic, social and environmental issues are considered equally. As I said at the beginning, this document is lightweight, a band-aid on the threats highlighted within this document. The report seems to be something that is required by law, rather than a working document that actually addresses the issues that are presented in the report. And I'm not alone in my assessment of this document. After reading through the community responses, the overwhelming theme was that this plan was not bold enough and does not go far enough. Similarly, the draft changes supposedly based on the responses from the community are rather lacking. The responses were literally yelling at you to do more to protect the environment, and at best we got a vague sentence or two. Next slide, please. An example. The city is also investigating opportunities to increase ecological linkages and biodiversity through planting native trees and plants in priority areas. Investigating and doing are two different things, and you're already planting natives and trees. I ask the council to reject this document. Employ an actual independent climate scientist who can guide the council on what measures can be undertaken and respect the wishes of the residents to take the environment and climate change seriously. I've read all your documents pertaining to future-proofing the city previously and the current ones listed, and frankly, none actually do anything much other than list the threats and problems we will face and monitor them. Or like the charmer, look at it again in a few years' time. I had a look at the State Environment Report 2021 just to see how we're doing. Was that any better? Well, now I know that the natural area protection since 2021 hasn't changed. I know the condition of vegetation in Shepherd's Bush Reserve. I had to look up where that was, and it's deteriorated. We planted 3,000 trees in the Leafy Tree Program. I got a little excited when I read the Friends Group were now having to look after 60% more hectares of bushland, until I realised it actually wasn't more bushland, they were just having to look after more. Natural areas within the city reserves, not changed, but I did find out how many mattresses we're collecting. Honestly, you just have to do better. And it's not that difficult. There are so many brilliant ideas out there for sustainable cities that change the way people live. Even a new building code where greenery becomes part of the design and windows become energy producers. And for goodness sake, stop allowing building in the coastal dunes. The community doesn't want it. Take the plunge and put it in writing. In the 80s, they mandated a buffer for the coastline, and they didn't know then what we know now. This plan, as it stands, will cost us very little, particularly in the face of millions we are outlaying for surf clubs and sea sports clubs. We can afford to be more bold. Next slide, please. I close with a quote from the latest publication from the United Nations Environmental Program, UNEP. In societies and governments, there are many cognitive and political biases that force a focus on the short term, to the detriment of the long-term prosperity. Lagging sustainable development goals, climate change, declining biodiversity, and a raft of other issues show that our focus on the short and near term is doing the world no favours. The world faces multiple and cascading issues which are affecting all countries and the developing world more acutely. In the face of the triple planetary crisis of climate change, nature and biodiversity loss and pollution and waste, we might easily throw up our hands and imagine the world of 2050, just 25 years from now, as a dangerous, damaged place where both human society and environment inhabits faces new and heightened threats. However, the point of their report is not to predict the future. The intention, by drawing on a wide diversity of disciplines and voices, is to foresee the future. What, might you ask, is the difference? Prediction is passive. It means locking in a vision of the future. Foresight is about imagining the future and then looking how to change it. Thank you.
Sorry, no pause, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Baldwin. Elected members, any questions? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you so much for your detailed analysis of our environmental strategy.
Thank you.
But I'd like to know what your position is on the item on tonight's agenda with respect to Amendment 16, which is taking 31 natural areas and changing their zoning from public open space to environmental conservation reserves and adding 28.8 hectares to our environmental estate. Does that meet with your approval?
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, Ms. Bowen.
Absolutely.
Anything further, Councillor Chester?
No, I'm just pointing out that there are some positive aspects of the city's activity.
There are some.
Yes, okay. No, there's no need to respond further. Thanks. Any further questions from elected members? If not, thank you, Ms. Bowen.
Thank you.
The next deputation, can I call forward, please, Mr. Scott Joy? This is regarding item 12.11, corporate sponsorship application, Whitford Church of Christ Incorporated for Heathridge Carols and Bark 2024. Thank you, Mr. Joy.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me okay? Thanks for the time. Speak about Carols in the Park. I am representing Whitford Church of Christ, which actually trades as True North Church, and the tradition that is Heathridge Carols in the Park. It's been rolling for around about 30 years. For those of you who haven't maybe experienced what that is like, I've actually got a really quick one-minute video. The next slide, if you could play that, for you to get a feel for what that is like before I share more with you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next slide shows about bringing hope, joy to the community. So this event at Heathridge Park has become a tradition and an ongoing connection point for so many families in our city. This year we had, if you turn to the next slide, the community engagement across three events that True North is involved in. The marquee event is at Heathridge Park. So at Yanchep there were 6,000 people, Heathridge over 16,000, which is our best guesstimate. Perth City had about 12,000 people. Heathridge is an ongoing significant investment for True North Church and a much-loved event. So I want to acknowledge and thank the city for your partnership and support of that for many years. Multiple mayors have come and spoken and opened those events, welcomed the community in and been part of that those festivities. The success of the event has meant that there's obviously some more costs, more challenges, and wanting to ensure that we can keep this sustainable going forward. This is noted as probably one of the largest Christmas gatherings in the state, certainly in the Perth metro area. There's not any others that we know of that are this large and have this level of volunteerism and support than the Heathridge Carols. That next slide will show you a few more photos as well of that. Each year there is a significant fireworks display at the end, which is obviously a highlight for so many kids and people. It's a traditional home of Carols in the Park. The next slide will show that we have a lot of commentary and feedback of families and people saying that I bring my family, I have multiple generations now, I have grandkids, great-grandkids. The picnic blankets seem to all mesh together and become this mosaic of even more people connecting together. And in the midst of a time when we're busy and we're more active than ever before, I think, and more devices and things to keep us occupied, there's also a sense that there's people that are even more disconnected and lonely than they've ever been. So this sort of an event, we get a lot of feedback in saying, hey, this is just so good to get the kids out, fresh air, open air, singing, interacting, displays and activity that's happening, food trucks that are going on, and it's very very well represented and supported by particularly families, with the aim to that to be such a positive and safe space for families together, which is what it's become. Volunteerism is the next slide that we have across these events, 450 volunteers. Heathridge itself, we have over 200 volunteers giving them their time and energy, as well as paid staff for True North Church that also give of their time, I being one of those. So for Heathridge alone, there's as we drill down more into analysing what the hours and the different roles of the volunteers, it really actually peaks out past $60,000 in volunteer investment from our organisation, a not-for-profit organisation, for this particular event at Heathridge. So a significant undertaking, a significant mobilisation of people. And we take this our responsibility to community, engaging community, very seriously. Often churches are trying to get people into pews. With this sort of an undertaking, we're actually actively pushing people out of the church to be part of building and establishing community spaces, safe community spaces for the betterment of our community. The next slide shows our social media impact, which is over 620,000 points of social media contact, significant organic and also some paid reach. That is one of the primary ways of information getting out, and the number of people that tag in photos from previous years or have something that they link in with their families and loved ones and say, hey, we're going this year, and it spreads out. So a significant amount of reach. And through this sort of medium, we also promote and let people know about where the Ausland interpreters are going to be, so people who need to sign in can sit in a certain spot, or the countdown of how many days are coming to it to build that momentum for kids and families who want to engage. Our website, which is the next slide, is a primary point of contact for that. We drive people to that, and on that slide it details how We also have a live stream for the Etheridge Carol. So those who can't make it, can't get down there, or sick, we had over 2,000 people part of the live stream as well. So not just the 16,000 in person, but the 2,000 that were also tuning in on the live stream. We're so thankful for our partners. Last year, we had significant partners across these three events. And again, a huge thank you to City Joondalup for being a significant partner in that. As I detail a few more things, that next slide, if you hit play on that, please, that'll just rotate through a few images from the Heathridge Carols. I wanted to acknowledge, again, I've said it, I think, two or three times already, that the support that we have from the City of Joondalup. And I'm so thankful to see in the agenda and the processes that you put through that is a recommendation to support this event again. Last year, there was a support, of $20,000 towards the event, significant cost escalations from last year, and then obviously showed out in the success of the event and the patronage of it. We are, part of this deputation is to request that consideration, strong consideration be given to maintaining that support, given the, how we've stewarded that well in how many people have come, and the community pride in the city that brings. We also have, more that we actually provide to the city that's listed in the document. So we do have web links and website, logos for the carols for the City of Joondalup. There's also that 2,000 people I said on the live stream opportunities to get the City of Joondalup branding out, as well as being able to distribute marketing items that the city would like to bring or have a stall at the carols to be able to engage the community from a city point of view. So there are further benefits to the city than what's actually been listed in the agenda. We have some further the cost escalations from last year. There's been some significant movement in our traffic management requirements. So with the Ocean Reef Road coming under Main Roads jurisdiction, there was an increased level of need to engage with that. And like I said right up front, we want this to be a very safe and family-friendly event, and that extends to the traffic side of things too. We had our traffic management company step back on us that we have dealt with because of capacity. They didn't think they could meet those room requirements. So we've gone out to the market to look at other management companies and have already spent $4,000 on a new traffic management plan that will be delivered to the city this Thursday. So already close to half of what the budget has previously been. And rather than a $10,000 spend overall this year, it's looking like it's a $35,000 spend due to these increased regulations or requirements that Main Roads are putting in place or requiring the city to work through us on. So that's a significant impact. We continue to develop our sponsorship base and have been active in that, in having business networking events to develop more sustainability for the event and broaden our base of support. But I would ask that the city strongly consider supporting us at least with that $20,000 again this year, and even to consider the full amount that we've asked for $25,000. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Joy. Elected members, any questions? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Mr. Joy, you will be aware, of course, that the city has recommended funding be approved for this event.
Yes.
I'm just wondering, do you feel to some extent you may be preaching to the converted?
I hope I'm preaching to the converted and that you're on board to support it again for another $20,000. Yeah, I mean, I would like to think that I'm preaching to the converted. If you've seen it or you've had some family member that's gone, or even just looking at these images, the significant engagement, and I think it's probably the only... there would be other things in the city, obviously, that happen around Christmas, but the scale of this and the investment is huge. We clearly have done it for 30 years, and we are significantly invested in and want to see it continue. Like I said, I think we're wanting to build that sustainability in for our community. So, yeah, definitely I would like to think that there would be significant support around the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzi.
I do love the event. I go with my children every year. Last year, though, we were about midway into the rite, and there was a lot of issue with the sound. I don't know if you were aware of it, but it was very hard to even hear the music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if anything's been changed with, if you've thought about that for this year.
So we have a production company that we work with that we provide feedback to, and we work with them, pardon the pun. So they actually are investing more in what they can provide us. So we've gone back to them and they say, we love the event as well. They've been involved for many years. So they're actually upscaling some of what their equipment is. We went for a bigger stage last year for better visibility and screens that were I suppose the resolution was better. And you can see that. So the sound is one area that, yeah, we continue to need to monitor and develop that. And we've already met with them, and there's plans for more sound and better quality sound. Again, it's a continuous improvement. How do we have the posture of continuing to improve the event so the quality remains high? Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Mr. Joy, for the deputation. Just two questions. The first question in relation to the amounts. Obviously, the application was for $25,000. Based on the General Ops matrix, has come back with a recommended value of 13,000 and previously has been 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious, depending on which amount the city proceeds with, what impact you think those varying amounts will have on the ability for your organisation to hold this event and its potential success?
It puts significant strain on that. We've developed our network and put more time. We had a networking meeting, as I said, just this past month, themed on Christmas in July, but to thank our supporters, sponsors, and generate new ones to be engaged in it. So this isn't. So we're not asking you to pay our bills for us, or because we are significantly invested, and we're continuing to try and develop that depth and pool as well. What we'd love for the city to do is continue. Validating the event, I suppose, and walking with us in that. A hit of $7,000, if I can say it that way, a hit from last year, or a reduction from last year of $7,000, and then you couple that with a 350% increase in what our traffic management costs are going to be, we've got some maths to do. We desperately do not want to reduce or diminish the quality or the capacity of what we can provide to the community. So that we'd make question, we'd have to question what we can do. We are already well and truly on the front foot in getting more community sponsors. I've got another meeting tomorrow with a new potential sponsor. But we'd love to be able to say the city's continuing to support us to the extent that you are.
Thank you, Mr. Choi.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's the end. We have no more time for further questions. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Choi.
Thank you.
We now move on to public question time. There's a set of procedures relating to public question time, and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You have the opportunity to ask two questions, and your questions should be directed to myself as chair and asked in a polite and respectful manner. Questions asked at a briefing session must relate to an item listed on the briefing session agenda. Please state your name and address for the public record. Can I first of all call forward Ms. Emma Coupland?
Good evening, councillors. My name is Emma Copeland. I am from Belden at 22 Ensign Way. I have two questions related to the draft environment strategy. My first question is, why is this environment strategy so limited in scope and goals compared to the environment strategy of 2014 to 2019? My second question.
Sorry, we'll stop you. Your first question. I'll get that one. So, Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you very much for the question. I'll refer that to our Manager of Strategic and Organisational Development for a response. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you through Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you for your question. The reason that it's different, the current draft environment strategy is designed to be a high-level guidance document, and it has a number of environmental plans that sit under it. The reason it's different is because when we developed the previous environment plan in 2014, we didn't have a lot of those plans in place. So part of the approach back then was to develop up our environmental framework and have a lot of plans and strategies in place to address all of the issue-specific environmental concerns that we have. We've now come quite a long way. It's 10 years. We've developed up a lot of those plans. As you'll see in the framework that's on page 12 of the draft plan, we now have plans in place for climate change, for water, for bushfire management, for weed management, for pathogen management, and all of those other environmental issues that we need to address. So the intent is that we will continue to implement all of those issue-specific plans, but have this high-level strategy that sits over the top.
Ms. Hoffman, do you have a second question?
I do, thank you. The draft environment strategy refers to the climate change strategy of 2024 to 2034. When can we expect this strategy to be finalised?
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. The draft climate change plan will be coming out for public consultation very soon. Actually, I think it's this week that it'll be released for public consultation. Council will endorse the draft should be released for public consultation at the June council meeting.
Thank you, Ms. Copeland.
Thank you, Cupid.
Can I call forward, please, Mrs. Sonia Elek?
Hello, my name is Sonia Elek. My address is 18 Farraway, Padbury. And my question is also about the draft environmental strategy. I have two questions. My first question is, when can we expect the inclusion of specific and measurable targets and an appropriate level of detail in the strategy?
Thank you, Ms. Vicario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As I mentioned in the previous question in my response, the intent of this strategy is that it's a high-level framework, and all of the plans and strategies that sit below this strategy in terms of our different issue-specific plans do have very detailed actions and specific targets around water, waste. We have natural area management plans in place for all of our major conservation and coastal reserves, which have specific targets for those. So we didn't want to duplicate all of the things that are in those current plans, which are also endorsed by council. So the idea with this strategy was that it would be a high-level framework that would provide for all of those issue-specific plans to have the detail of how we would actually deliver those things on the ground and how it would be measured and monitored and reported against.
Thank you. Ms. Elek, do you have a second question?
Yeah. And will the strategy be redrafted with attention to including more feedback from the community consultation process?
Ms. Vicario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As I mentioned, the intention is that the detail, that a lot of the commentary that we received from the community was about having additional detail in the strategy. We do have that level of detail, but it is in the lower level issue-specific plans. It's up to council's consideration in terms of what they endorse when the draft comes back for council during this month. But from in terms of the level of detail that people were asking for through the consultation, we are confident that that is all in the issue-specific plans that we currently have in place.
Thank you, Ms. Elek.
Thank you.
Can I call forward, please, Mrs. Susan Boylan?
Susan Boylan, 52 Care West Drive, Mullaloo. Councillor over here indicated that there was significant regeneration of large amounts of bush in the plan. Can you please tell me what page that on? Because I cannot find it anywhere in this plan. And I've got it up here. I can't find it.
Ms. McCurry.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The item that Councillor Chester was referring to is a separate item on the agenda. It is an amendment to the local planning scheme where there is a number of reserves that are going to be recommended to be rezoned as environmental conservation rather than public open space through the city's local planning scheme.
Okay.
Do you have a second question, Ms. Boland?
What percentage of the natural areas do we have left in Joondalup? Does anyone know?
Ms. Vicario.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. That's a difficult question to answer because it depends on how you're actually quantifying what are we comparing against. Are we comparing against pre-settlement to what we have now, or are we comparing against what we actually have in terms of the city versus what is actually protected? I'm happy to have a conversation with you outside of the meeting so that I can give you the data that you... Yep, thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Boland. Are there any other members of the public in the gallery wishing to ask a question? Yes, Ms. Kwok. Ms. Kwok first. I saw your hand first.
Good evening, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. Please state your name and address for the public record.
Michelle Kwok, 15 Crabwell Ocean Reef. First question is item 16.1. We're just wondering why there's no officer's comment. There's no notice of motion.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor, and officer's comment will be provided prior to the council meeting. So on the final agenda, an officer's comment will be provided.
To the second question, Ms. Cobb.
On item 4.
Sorry, is that a question?
A question on item 4. No, it's not a question. I'm going to talk about item 4, a question, yes.
You mean 12.4?
Sorry?
Which item are you referring to on the agenda?
4.
What's the name of it?
Item 4.
Deputations?
Yes.
The specific report.
Okay, just ask your question and we'll deal with it when you ask.
Thank you. I just wonder, earlier on this year, at least there's two speakers, I think it's Jacqueline Hope and Mary O'Byrne, they have their slides pulled because they are images of children. I've seen lots tonight. I'm just wondering why there's different rules for different people.
Thank you, Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I do have a response for you, but I just have to find it here somewhere. Yes, so just confirming that, yes, that rule does apply. However, we had written to Mr. Joy to confirm whether the images and the video were publicly available and that he would indicate that consent had been given to use the images. And he responded that they do have physical A-frame signs at all entry points to every one of those public events, stating that photos and video footage will be taken for marketing purposes along with pre-show notice displayed on digital screens. So from a governance perspective, we were comfortable with the response that was provided by Mr. Joy to enable him to show that PowerPoint presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kwok. Yes, sir, I think you have questions. Please come forward, state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name's Alan Jones. I live at 8 Yorkshire Grove, Currumbine, opposite the Caledonia Park. Can I just preface, I'm here, I think, under some cross wires because I've been talking to the governance team about being able to ask some questions. I didn't realise I'd be addressing the council. The email that I got on Friday said, thank me for participating in the online survey, and then stated a report on the consultation outcomes has been prepared and we've presented at a briefing session on Tuesday the 13th with the intention being discussed at the council meeting on Tuesday the 27th. So I did come here this evening very much thinking a much more less formal and information being provided for me to say a few things or ask a few questions.
Okay, if I can stop you there for a second. So
yes.
Just to explain the process, we're currently in public question time. So at this point in time, you have the opportunity to ask questions, up to two questions. You're also listed to do a public statement.
Oh.
So you will have 2 minutes in the public statement time to address the...
Look, thank you for that. As I haven't had an opportunity, I've been told that there is a report in the agenda. I've quickly formulated two questions.
Please go ahead and ask your first question.
Having had a quick cursory glance, there is a recommendation that the council endorses an application to the Department of Local Government, Sport and Cultural Industries for the Club Nights Light program, $163,670. to upgrade the sports floodlighting to the Australian standards of sports lighting. I guess my question is that now endorsed, supported, a done deal, or is there still further consultation that will be entered into before this floodlight development goes ahead?
Okay, let's stop you there. Thank you. Director Town for you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In the report endorses the forwarding of the grant application. Pending the result of that, if the city is successful in achieving that grant application, then we then proceed to the normal design process for a park. So, yes, there would usually be some form of community engagement at that point.
Sorry to clarify, that there will be further community consultation once that grant's been granted.
Director Humphrey.
So, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the community would be notified of the grant outcome and provided the designs, and there would be an opportunity for people to provide their thoughts at that time, but I wouldn't describe it as consultation. We'd be asking people to provide feedback to influence the design.
Mr. Jones, I'll use my discretion to say that that's one question. Do you have a second question?
Thank you. Well, it's just an extension of that, and maybe you don't have the answer, but I guess as a resident opposite the park, we would like the residents that are immediately impacted by it would like to have opportunity specifically to talk about, say, light pollution and the impacts on car parking on the street.
So is this a question?
Yes. I'm attempting to. I'm sorry. As I said, this is very impromptu.
Yeah, because go straight to the
there
question.
Was some miscommunication in the email I received. That's as far. Yeah. Will there be, what sort of community consultation will take place for us to talk about such things as the car parking and potential, you know, light pollution over residents living nearby the park?
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the design would take account of issues like parking and light pollution in any case. We would notify residents of upcoming works. Because it's listed as a recreation park, we wouldn't be doing a specific consultation program for the upgrade. There would be more of a notification process.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
I need to clarify. The reason I came
Give me one moment, please. I have the chair. So you'll have the opportunity to expand on that in your opening statements. Thank you.
Okay. Look.
Yep. Thank you.
I'm.
Second, any other members of the gallery wishing to ask a public question this evening?
Thank you.
If not, I'll declare public question time closed and we'll move to public statement time. There is a set of procedures relating to public statement time and I request that you follow my direction at all times. You're able to make a statement for up to 2 minutes and your statement should be directed to myself as chair and be polite and respectful. No questions or discussion will occur at the end of your statement. Statements made at a briefing session must relate to an item listed on the briefing session agenda. Please come forward and state your name and address for the public record. First person on the list for tonight is Mr. Alan Jones. Please come forward.
I'll continue to say I'm here under completely cross wires, different expectations. My statement is I would hope and expect the city goes through some consultation with the local residents. This wording or terminology notification is, to me, sounds it's a done deal, don't worry, the lights are going up, etc. So I just would like some commitment from the city that we will get some consultation for the residents that will be impacted. That's my statement concluded. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. There will be a council meeting and the subject will be addressed at the council meeting. You have an opportunity to also ask questions, make a statement at the council meeting in due course. Thank you. The next person I have on the register is Ms. Emma Copeland. Please come forward.
Thank you for the time. My name is Emma Copeland of 22 Ensign Way, Belden. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the revised environment strategy. I represent Joondalup's Go Beyond Gas campaign with the Conservation Council of Western Australia. I'd like to say many thanks to Sue Boylan for her thorough and considered analysis of the strategy. We only received notice last Friday afternoon that the strategy was on today's agenda, which wasn't enough time for us to prepare a deputation, so I'm using this limited time to give comment. The revised strategy has minimal changes and very little incorporation of community feedback, despite 5 submissions from environmental groups. The draft document compares poorly to environment strategies from, for example, the City of Coburn, the City of South Perth, and the Town of Victoria Park, whose strategies have measurable targets and detail. Moreover, this strategy doesn't meet the standards set by previous City of Joondalup publications. For example, the strategies from 2014 to 2019 for the environment and for climate change. For example, page 32 refers to a now out-of-date 2018 to 23 bushfire risk management plan, which is not even on the list of Joondalup's environment publications. There is very little detail throughout the strategy. Crucially, there are no targets. For instance, no 2030 targets, for example, for net zero emissions or minimum canopy cover, though Joondalup's State of the Environment report 2022-23 showed that just a 3% increase in canopy from 2014 to 2020. There is no reference to the City of Joondalup State of Environment report, which actually could provide a 2022 baseline at which to measure achievements of targets by 2034.
Thank you, Ms. Kaplan. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public in the gallery wishing to make a public statement? If not, I declare public statement time closed. The next item on the agenda is apologies and leave of absence. I have received an apology from Mayor Jacob and from CEO Mr. James Pearson for tonight's meeting. Also an apology from Councillor Christopher May. I think everybody else is in attendance. We now have leaves of absence, so you should see on the screen before you the current leave of absence that have been previously approved. Are any elected members requesting a further leave of absence? Councillor Jones.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Requests for absence on the 19th to the 21st of August inclusive, please.
Thank you, Councillor Jones. I'll just give a moment for that to be recorded. And then Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. From the 30th of August to the 4th of September.
Inclusive?
Yes.
Thank you. Any further elected members wishing to request a leave of absence? So those requests for leave of absence will be listed in the agenda for the council meeting to be held on Tuesday, the 27th of August. The next item is confirmation of minutes, and this will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on the 27th of August. And the next item, 9, is announcements by the presiding member without discussion. This item will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on the 27th of August 2024. We now move on to item 10, identification of matters for which the meeting may be closed to the public. There are no confidential reports on tonight's agenda. However, the following items may be dealt with behind closed doors if there are any questions from elected members on the confidential attachments. Those items being 12.13, sponsorship of significant events, Joondalup Festival of Motoring 2024. Item 12.19, tender 002/24, construction of the Percy Doyle Outdoor Youth Facilities. And item 12.20, tender 012/24, processing of commingled recyclables services. So just as a reminder, that if there are questions on the confidential attachments for those items, we will need to go behind closed doors. Next item on the agenda is petitions. The City has received one petition, being a petition requesting the City of Joondalup consider an alternative position for the proposed pathway on the eastern side of Plumdale Way in Woodvale. Elected members, are there any further petitions? So the petition I just read out will be received and checked for validity, and if valid, it will be presented to the council meeting to be held on the 27th of August 2024. We now move on to item 12, the report section of the agenda. So as presiding member, I do have flexibility to modify the sequence that we address each of these items. Generally, that's based on deputations and questions and public statements. So I will go to item 12.9, which is the outcomes of Community Consultation Environment Strategy 2024-2034. Elected members, are there any questions on this item? Councillor Pizzi?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just getting them up on my computer now. Are we still purchasing carbon offsets for fleet emissions? As I thought, instead of a carbon offset purchase, we were going to plant trees and vegetation locally instead. On page 527, it says that we are currently doing that. But if we are going to do this, why is it not in the strategy?
Ms. McCarrier.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. That is correct. Following the decision of Council at the June meeting and the feedback we've received from elected members, we have removed that from both the climate change plan and also the environment strategy. The reason it's in there is something that we had been doing, and at the time that the draft was developed, we were still planning on purchasing the offsets. However, we did remove it from the section where it says what we would continue to do. So it's not actually an action in either of the plans.
Councillor Pizzi?
I may have missed it in the strategy then. Is it written anywhere in the strategy that instead of buying the carbon credits that we would plant trees locally?
Ms. McCarrier.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, that's not currently listed in the environment strategy. That detail is in the draft climate change plan. For the environment strategy, we've tried to keep it at a really high level in terms of the actions, with the more specific deliverables being in those issue-specific plans, such as the climate change plan.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Anything further, Councillor Pizzi?
One more question. The annual performance measures, what will you actually be targeting? I understand that you'll be measuring greenhouse gas generation from the city and a percentage change generated by the city, but what will you be measuring against what would be a favourable outcome? So what is the target?
Ms. Vicario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The environment strategy doesn't itself have targets. The targets are, again, in the issue-specific plans. So the target will be whatever Council endorses in terms of the draft climate change plan and those proposed targets that we have included.
Anything further, Councillor Pizzi? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. I just have a declaration of interest. It's an interest that may affect impartiality, as I am the Secretary of the Friends of the Yalagonga Regional Park, which was one of the five community environmental groups which provided a submission on the plan.
So just to clarify, which item is this for, the one we're currently dealing with?
That's correct, yes.
Thank you. If you can complete the paperwork, it would be appreciated. Do you have any questions on this item?
Yes, I did. I'm just trying to get the page here. Sorry. On page 68, it talks about there was feedback sought from Aboriginal stakeholders on the draft environment strategy. Do we have a copy of the outcome of that engagement, the feedback that was received?
Mr. Carrier.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The feedback has been included within the strategy rather than a copy of the feedback. We actually engaged with a consultant who represented First Nations people and gave us feedback about the plan as well as some specific wording to include in the plan. So I can provide some of that to you, but most of it is already actually reflected in the draft strategy.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. It's just a request for if there is a report or specific written outcomes of that consultation for those to be provided to Council. So.
Possible?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, that's fine, thank you. Any other elected members wishing to ask any questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just actually in relation to an answer that was just given in relation to the Indigenous consultant, I was just wondering what the costs were for that consultant, and was that approved by council or was it done on delegated authority?
Mr. Currier.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the cost is within the financial section of the report. It was $5,000 to engage the consultant. We had a request during a early strategy session that we held with elected members and asked us to consult with First Nations people on this strategy. That is why we included it, apart from the fact that it is something that we thought was a really good idea and would add a lot of value to the plan.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill? Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Rafters.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just a query in regards to whether there's any conflict with having a trying to achieve a strategy of transition to a low-carbon city, for example, and sponsoring events such as a festival of motoring in the city centre. Is there any conflict from the city's point of view?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I think all of those decisions are ones for the council to decide upon when they are considering those items that are brought forth to the council. I'm not sure of the emissions which were emitted from the Joondalup Festival of Motoring. I don't think that we have a record of that. However, I guess those types of activities are something for the council to consider whenever they are brought forward here for a decision.
Anything further, Councillor Rafters? Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.11, corporate sponsorship application with the Church of Christ for Heathridge Carols in the Park 2024. Elected members, any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just coming to the page. I'm just trying to understand on page 81, there's the two columns, one which is benefits provided to the city and then the assessments matrix. It appears that for the one which says digital marketing, it says that it's not ticked, but then for the assessment matrix, it is to be ticked. What do we consider digital marketing? Is that promotion of the events with the City of Joondalup branding attached to it, or what is actually involved in that?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Digital marketing, as it provides there, we would anticipate that the sponsor would provide information relating to the City of Joondalup sponsorship through newsletters, emails, on-hold messaging. I think I will check as to whether because Mr. Joy and the application does provide with regard to some of the digital media advertising that is undertaken by the church, by the sponsorship group, whether that should actually be ticked, because I think that there is a benefit there that could be provided to the city. So I'll provide some more information in the pack in relation to that, because their social media coverage is quite extensive as being put forward.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, just further on to what the Director has stated. For the table itself, could we consult with the proponent of the application on whether some of these benefits are actually being provided? Because looking at the information that's in the pack and then how it's assessed, it seems to imply some of them are being provided, but then certain boxes haven't been ticked, or they might be easily to be met. So, for example, the link, the logo and hyperlink on the website, to me that just seems to be an administrative change to include that, but we haven't ticked it. But it just seems to be something that if we discussed it would then be ticked. So is that something the administration would be open to, consulting with the proponent, whether they can actually meet some of this?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll take that one on notice, but it is usual that we rely upon the application that is being made to the city. However, and we do have a sponsorship officer that does liaise with sponsorship applicants to ensure that they understand what benefits can be provided from the city from the sponsor, understanding the assessment matrix, and we do have quite detailed guidelines as well. So we do try to help people through that sponsorship matrix and get the best value for money for themselves and for us as well. But taking your question on notice, I will talk to our sponsorship officer about that liaison.
Thank you. Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. My first question, just in regards to the actual table itself, I'm just wondering if someone could actually explain to me the differences between the columns, noting that the second column says city's assessment matrix benefits required. There's only one thing marked on it that isn't a dot. If you could give some clarity provided on what it actually means.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the guidelines detail the assessment matrix for different levels of sponsorship. So the applicant has made a sponsorship application for between $15,000 and $25,000. So the assessment has been undertaken using the guidelines for that particular sponsorship amount. And those are the benefits that we would expect from the sponsorship applicant to be able to provide to be able to meet the requirements of that dollar figure.
Yes, Councillor Hutton.
Yeah, so just to clarify that, the organisation would have to meet all of those requirements for the city to make a recommendation to proceed with that level of sponsorship. Is that correct, or is it the majority of?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yeah, it would be pretty much all of them. It would be come close to it. So there would be an assessment as to the types of benefits that are really important to the city. And as it's detailed on page 79, we have detailed that the full amount hasn't been recommended due to a number of areas that did not meet that particular matrix requirement.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, no, just in terms of, I guess, the process with moving forward with this agenda item, obviously noting the, I guess, the agenda gives us multiple options about what we might do. But there is a recommendation. Is it best to proceed with an alternate, or is it potentially possible to amend the current recommendation?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, thanks for the question. Maybe need to seek some clarity. If you wish to move an amendment or an alternate motion, it would be probably preferred that you perhaps request that at this meeting, and we can provide that within the briefing pack for you. Or alternatively, you can request that, which could be circulated to fellow elected members prior to the council meeting.
Sorry, just to clarify that, the agenda itself, it says the council may choose to, and then it basically gives us four options. One is 25,000, one is 13,000, one is 20, and one is not to proceed entirely. Whereas the recommendation is for 13,000. So my question is, will that recommendation appear? Will that recommendation have to be moved from the floor first? Or can we just begin by moving an alternate of one of the other values that have been suggested on page 82, 25,000 or 20,000?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, as per all council reports, we usually do provide, try to indicate the types of options that may be available to the council to select. With regard to this particular recommendation, if the elected members and the council do have a protocol in relation to alternate and amendment motions, so an alternate motion could be moved. My preference would probably be to have this motion move the officer's amendment and then an amendment, sorry, the officer's motion and an amendment moved at the council. But an alternate motion could be moved.
Yeah, so I suppose I'll just again flag my intention to move an amendment that that we proceed with the $20,000 sponsorship as in line with previous years. But I would also like to see that amendment include a provision for the city to go back to the organisation and seek to increase the number of benefits that are provided to the city to more align the application with the matrix provided.
Mr. Hopkins here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yeah, we can draft something for you along those lines and provide that within the briefing notes for you.
Thank you.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton? Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you, I'm just seeking a bit of clearer understanding of the issues raised with the improved traffic management plan outcomes that are alluded to in the agenda and where that's going.
Edric Cousin.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, it is our understanding that the traffic management plan will be provided to the city later this week. That was after an application for an extension of time to provide that to the city. So once we receive the traffic management plan, we'll be able to assess the traffic management plan and compliance with the requirements.
Anything further, Councillor Ventura? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I just have a few queries that I didn't get to ask earlier, so perhaps we could get some information from the applicant so that we have all this for the meeting. Firstly, with relation to traffic management, I'd like to know if Main Roads WA is kicking in anything towards the traffic management.
That's Carson.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, no, Main Roads WA is not providing any support for traffic management. It is the responsibility of the event organiser.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
Yes, secondly, there was mention from the applicant or the representative of the applicant that they were approaching other sponsors, one namely Tomorrow, I believe I heard. I'm just wondering, is the city aware of the other sponsorship agreements that that are part of this this event? Are they aware who the other sponsors are, and is council privy to see those other sponsors?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor. As detailed within the application, there is a Lottery West grant which has been applied for. I'm not too sure of the status of that at the moment. But we will get in contact with the applicant to provide further information within the briefing pack as to any other sponsorship details that can be provided to us.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
Yes, Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you. Just further to that, the mention of the funding, I'm just wondering in the distribution of this funding, because I think I'm aware that there's more than one event at one or more cities in the Western Australian area run by the same organisation. When it comes to the allocation of funds that are approved from the City of Joondalup, how is the city assured that the funding that we supply is earmarked specifically for the Heathridge event, or does it get put into a pool and then dished out how they see fit?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you very much for the question. The expenditure and income is detailed within the application. As part of any sponsorship application, there is a requirement for a detailed acquittal to be provided to the city prior to the release of the last 30% of any of the sponsorship funding. So we would need to be satisfied that it had been dedicated to the city's event and spent in an appropriate manner prior to releasing those funds.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
Just one, if I may. It is a fantastic event. It's an event for families, and I love it. But I'm just wondering if the amount of $13,000 is approved, could we seek some clarity and some itemised details from the applicant in relation to what they would have to maybe cut down or cut out as a result of our sponsorship not being the full amount applied for?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's a question that we can ask the applicant, and we will provide their response to us, if appropriate, to elected members in the briefing pack.
Councillor Fishwick.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. My recollection of this application last year was that alternate was requested by the presiding person of the day, being Mayor Albert Jacob, for $20,000. Therefore, I would seek to have an alternate presented in the pack so that we may go down that path, just in case there's some ramifications with an amendment might not get up. So I'd request an alternate that the amount $13,000 be changed to $20,000.
Checking to you.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yep, that can be provided. We will include Councillor Hutton's proposal as well as the motion which you've just requested as well.
Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Pizzey.
Just a similar question from Historic as to, and now I think it's been answered, but I was just wondering, did the city recommend the 20,000 last year's carols? And if it did, why is it less this year?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you for the question. The city has sponsored this event since 2010 with an annual commitment of between 11,000 and 13,000. Last year, $13,000 was recommended as well by the administration. However, the council made a determination to sponsor the event to the value of $20,000.
Anything further, Councillor Pizzey? Elected members, anything further on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.17, Club and Night Lights Programme, 2025-26 grant. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It seems to be that the resident from the North Ward, which was here tonight, was under the impression that he had not been consulted or was expecting a different form of consultation, but the agenda speaks of a consultation having occurred. Are we aware if that resident was in the consultation zone?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, he was. And my understanding is he provided a response to the consultation. I think the confusion referred more to the format of the meeting he was expecting to be at tonight. He was expecting it more to be a question and answer session on one specific item, not a council briefing session.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
No, that's all right.
Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll revert to the order in the agenda and we'll go to item 12.1, Developments and Subdivision Applications, June 2024. Any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to 12.2, Proposed Closure of a Portion of the Road Reserve, Corner West Coast Drive and the Plaza in Sorrento. Any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Yes, thank you. Is there a proposed value that would be paid for the, what I take is the purchase of this land?
Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. There's not a proposed value at the moment. The city isn't involved in the purchase or the selling of the land. Our role is to facilitate the road closure or partial road closure request. If council do support it, we then make that recommendation or pass that decision off to the state government, and then they handle the process whereby the land is passed from the state government being Crown land across to the private landowner. So we're not actually involved in the back end, the transaction process.
Anything further, Councillor Raftis?
Yes, thank you. Just wondering whether perhaps the director can take us through the process of how this piece of land was able to be factored into the development and its approval without the land actually being owned by the proponent. Thank you.
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It is an interesting decision-making process for developments like this where there is development intended on the private land, but there's also an intent shown on the plan for development in the public realm. So in this instance, it might be verge upgrades and specifically for what we're dealing with this evening, the intent to use a portion of the road reserve as an elevated deck for alfresco dining. The alfresco deck itself isn't formally approved through the planning approval, but there's certainly the intent there that's demonstrated by the approval of what the proponent would like to use this area of land for. So whilst there is still a separate process, the developer would need to go through to actually use this area of land for alfresco dining, even if it wasn't intended to be an elevated deck. There would be, as I said, there would be that separate process there. However, there's been a clear intent established by the planning approval granted by the WAPC, albeit noting that there does need to be separate approvals obtained through the local government as the land manager.
Councillor Rutgers.
Thank you. Just a follow-up. Is the city formally required to undertake this process, or can we choose to vote against this recommendation? Thank you.
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. There's no obligation on council to support the partial road closure. It is open to council to make an alternative decision and not support it. There is a separate pathway for the applicant and the developer to use this space for al fresco purposes. In this instance, because there's the intent there to create almost a level deck that then ties into the levels on the private land, there's the need to construct some permanent structures in the road reserve. That does complicate things beyond what a typical al fresco might be, where you are just putting tables and chairs in situ on established land. Because there are intended to be permanent structures, if we were to facilitate this in a different way than closing the road reserve, there would need to be legal agreements entered into between the city and the developer, and there would also likely be the need to enter into some leasing arrangements as well between it would be the state government and us as the head lease, and then potentially a sublease with the developer.
Councillor Rutgers, anything further? That's it, members. Any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.3, proposed closure of two portions of road reserve 11 and 15 Whitewater Lookout, Iluka. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. For the officer's recommendation, which is not to support the road closure in these two properties, is there any appeal routes for the landowners if the council proceeds with the officer's recommendation?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll take the question on notice just to dig through the Land Administration Act to see if there is the ability for the landowners to make representation, if you like, to the state government, to the Minister of Lands. But there's not the traditional appeal route like there would be for a planning application by the State Administrative Tribunal that I'm aware of. But as I said, I'm certainly happy to take the question on notice and see what pathway there might be through the Land Admin Act.
Councillor Kingston, anything further?
Yes, following on from that, if this extinguishes the appeal or other routes where the city might be instructed to commence the road closure, in that circumstance, if it eventuates, what are the options that is open to the administration to deal with the structures that appear to be, at least in the drawings, built on the road reserve?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. If there's not an opportunity to close the road, in an ideal situation, we would see the two landowners remove the walls from the public realm, and they may choose to reconstruct the walls along their property boundaries. If that's not something that they choose to do, then I would anticipate the likely approach would be we would need to serve a building order on the landowners. That would give them the option to then appeal the building order to the State Administrative Tribunal. There may be limited ability for there to be any sort of mediation or negotiation if there's a clear established position that there's not an appetite to close the road. And so we would see where that process took us from in terms of the building order. That might then motivate the landowners to remove the structures and look to reconstruct them. And then I suppose if all else fails and we're unable to motivate the landowners to remove the walls, then there's also the availability for us to prosecute them for having unauthorised structures.
Any Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, just a further follow-up. If there's any comparable case law that the Director is aware of building orders that have been contested in the SAT for road reserves where structures have been requested to be removed.
Professor Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm happy to take that question on notice and follow up to see what we can find for you.
Councillor Hunt.
Just in terms of the road closure itself, obviously noting the Water Corporation issue, does the, I guess, suggested road closure have any long-term implications for the city in terms of proposed future works?
Totally.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. We've considered what potential impact the road closure would have from an infrastructure point of view. At this stage, it looks like there wouldn't be a long-term impact on the city in terms of its assets or future plans for road design and the like, being in a cul-de-sac. As you pointed out, there are state agency services that are already affected and would need to be dealt with as part of any road closure. I think for us, the main concern for the city is the potential precedent it may set by supporting a road closure to effectively legitimise an unauthorised structure within the road reserve.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton? That's it, members. Any further questions? That's from Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just curious as to, is there any idea from the city when the walls were actually constructed? And obviously further question to that, has this been noted by the city or has anyone approached the city in relation to these walls previously?
Totally.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So the wall at 11 Whitewater Lookout from the aerial mapping appears to have been constructed at the end of 2011, and then the wall at 15 Whitewater Lookout appears to have been constructed toward the end of 2016. This came to the city's attention by the Water Corporation, so when there was an issue with Water Corp's infrastructure, they were unable to access it because it was behind a wall, and they alerted the city to the fact that there may be structures in the public realm, which was obviously preventing access for them, and they requested our support to deal with that, basically.
Yes, Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. When did Water Corp bring this to the city's attention, and was it attempted to be dealt with back then, or was any attempts made since then up until now?
Totally.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The Water Corp brought it to our attention in October 2022. Since that time, we have engaged with the landowners and we initially requested them to remove the structures, and at the time the landowners declined to do that. And then instead there was a building order served on them, which they appealed to the State Administrative Tribunal. Through that process, they then advised that their intent was to, rather than look to remove the structures in the first instance, they would prefer to make an application to seek a partial road closure and effectively purchase that land so they could keep the walls in situ rather than having to remove them. So that's what we've been working on since we became aware of it in late 2022.
Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. So was there an official stay granted for the landowners until this is resolved? Was it an official stay granted, or is the city just sort of resolved to argue this out until it is resolved?
Gratefully.
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. There hasn't been a formal stay granted, if that's how it's described. It's not our practice, and it's certainly frowned upon by the State Administrative Tribunal if we're looking to take enforcement action in terms of prosecuting a landowner or landowners. while at the same time we're working through a process whereby they may be seeking to rectify the situation so in another way. So in this instance, because the landowners had been seeking this partial road closure, as I said, it wouldn't be our practice to then be prosecuting them for, I guess, the offence whilst they're in the process of trying to resolve it.
Quick question from me, Director Lee. With regards to the Water Authority infrastructure located behind the fence line, were they able to access that eventually, or is it a problem that they can't?
Thank you, through Mr. Deputy Mayor. They've been able to access it and fix it, but I think only through engaging with the landowners and having to come onto, well, not onto their property, behind their fence line.
Thank you. Any further questions, let's see, members? Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering if there's no impact on the public realm. Has there been any suggestion that they purchase the intruded area?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. That's essentially what they're looking to do, and that this would be the first step in the process for them to purchase that. And so if there's support for the portion of the road reserve to be closed, there would then be a process toward the back end where they would have to purchase it. But as I mentioned before, I suppose the issue for the city, well, one of the issues for the city in this instance is the potential precedent it might set in legitimising unauthorised structures through the purchase of public land.
Councillors, any further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Just one quick question. In regards to the actual item, the individuals have stated in part of their argument that they are happy to pay for the relocation of the services. I just want to know, in condition to accepting this, is there any way that we can guarantee they actually proceed with that? Or will they have to proceed with that regardless? Or are we going to end up with a situation where the service providers are going to have to pay for the cost to relocate the services?
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I probably can't answer your question with absolute certainty at the moment, but if council were of a view to entertain the partial road closure, the first step in the process would be for us to undertake some consultation. That's with our community, but it's also with the service agencies. Through that process, I would hope that the service agencies would outline what their expectations would be in terms of the road closure, and they have to some degree, at least directly with the landowners, that those services would be required to be relocated. If the council were then at the back end of consultation of a view to still support the road closure, I'd imagine that we could include or outline what our expectations or caveats were with supporting the road closure, and that may be that all services are relocated at a landowner's cost. We still would then, I guess, lose control to necessarily enforce that, if that made sense. So whilst we can certainly hold that position, we do have a limited role in the overall decision-making process, which might limit the ability for us to ensure or enforce that actually happens at the back end.
Yep. And through you, Deputy Mayor, sorry, you just made reference to the community consultation would have to take place. I'm wondering, what would the cost of that community consultation, and would that cost be borne by the ratepayer, or is there a mechanism for the applicant to actually borne the cost of all of the administrative work that will have to take place from a city perspective to action this change?
Director Lee.
Thank you for you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The consultation, so the applicant has paid, the applicants have paid a fee for consideration of the proposal. That fee doesn't cover the costs of consultation, and so they would be required to bear those costs as well. In this instance, if we were going to proceed, we would be writing letters to service agencies and placing a notice and documents up on our website. So it wouldn't necessarily, I can't imagine there would be a significant cost that came with the
process of consultation for this one.
Do you have a final question, Councillor Hammond?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was just going to request that an this may not be required, but that an alternative being drawn up to proceed, the factor then, if, and again, this is permitting to be investigated, the factor then mechanism to make sure that the service cost was paid by the applicant, and also any costs associated with the city's administrative burden from doing consultations and the like is also passed on to the applicant themselves. So I can leave that with the administration to work on. Well done.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'd just like to refer that to Mr. Lee as to whether he is okay with the drafting of that or sees any potential issues.
Mr. Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, we're happy to prepare that alternate. We might engage with you throughout the week just to make sure we capture the wording. But, yeah, happy to prepare an alternate.
Final call, elected members on this item. Councillor O'Neill, I'll ask one question, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It's just a question in relation to setbacks. Should the land be purchased and the boundaries come forward and encroach forward, does it have any ramifications later on if the owners of the land choose to move their homes forward by way of extension, carports, garages, etc.? Or does the original setbacks that are applied still apply further on? I'm not clear about this one because it's very unique.
Director Lee.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The long story short would be the boundaries would change, and therefore any setbacks that would be measured as part of future extensions or even future redevelopment, if the whole site was to be redeveloped, would be measured from those new boundaries.
Thank you. We do have a big agenda tonight, so I do appreciate if there are no further questions. Have you got one burning question, Councillor Kingston? Make it brief, please.
Yes, thank you. It's just a question to take on notice. First of all, could we just get more information on the adverse impacts that might occur if the road is closed? If the road is closed and then the land transferred to the landowners, so the reduction of the verge, and also given that there's multiple service providers, not just the Water Corp on this one, there's about five or six. So the cumulative effects or effects on maintenance of those services.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yep, we can sort of summarise all those things into the briefing pack for you.
Thank you. There's three elected members have had second rounds on that one, so I'd like to move on to the next item. 12.4, execution of documents. Any questions from elected members on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Could I just get more understanding of on notice for the deed of variation for the cafe in Craigie Leisure Centre? Just the length of the terms and any other changes?
Dr. Humphrey, are you happy to take that question?
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll have to take the question on notice and provide further information, perhaps.
Thank you. Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.5, e-rideables, rideshare services in the city of Joondalup. Councillor Hamilton Prime.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I just wanted to flag my intention to my fellow councillors of an alternate capturing some of the feedback that was provided. I'll be working with Mr. Wilcox at the City Administration to come up with a wording, and I'll circulate to councillors in due course. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll take that as a comment. Any questions, Councillor O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just wondering if the city has or can it provide any information, reports, data of injuries within the city of Joondalup from e-scooters, including hospital admissions, permanent injuries, things like that. Is there anything that the city is aware of or can obtain for council prior to the council meeting?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor, the city doesn't have any of that information. That's not the sort of information we necessarily collect. We can take that on notice and contact the various authorities through police, Department of Health, and see if they're able to provide anything.
Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
Yes, just if it could be, if the city could approach the City of Stirling in relation to the same question, and if they have any information to share with us.
Mr. Woodcock?
Thank you again, through the Deputy Mayor. We'd be happy to ask that question of them.
Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Kingston?
Thank you. Just briefly, I saw that the City had put up a post on Facebook about stopping distances with vehicles on roads. Do we have any information on the stopping distances of e-scooters, given that they are quite heavy? So if somebody suddenly stopped, how many metres does it take to stop from moving at 25 kilometres an hour, which is the limit?
I'll go to Mr. Wilcock or Director Cutton.
Thank you, through the Deputy Mayor. No, I don't have that information. I will see if the rideshare companies or one of the organisations can provide me some information, or even the police. I'll investigate.
Anything further?
Yes, thank you. It's a further question on, do we have any understanding of how many newtons it takes to break a bone, so a femur or any other type of injury? So I'm just thinking, if there's an elderly person who's on one of the dual-use paths that then has a collision, what is the amount of newtons it is to cause an injury to that person?
So that's the amount of force required to cause injuries. Yes.
Yes.
So that's to Director... Well, Mr. Woodcock, I'll ask you if you wish to ask any bills.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. That is not something we certainly have. I'd have to get that, if I can get that question in writing from you, because I'm not sure that I understand exactly where you're going, and we can ask the Department of Health if they have anything in that regard.
Thank you. Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, thank you. I guess it's probably a question for the infrastructure team, given that I believe there's a number of civil engineers there, to see if for the road modelling that they do for regular traffic, if they're able to apply that expertise for modelling of crashes or injuries relating to pedestrians on the dual-use path with, say, what is the average weight of the user of a vehicle plus the average weight of the vehicle, and then what might be the relevant stopping distances or incidences that might occur. Is it something that could be considered or just thought through even on a higher level if possible?
Director Carson.
Free, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The short answer is no. Our current modelling cannot do that for vehicles, and highly unlikely that we'll be able to do that for e-scooters. So, yes, so unfortunately not.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
Yes. Do you think we could inquire with the Department of Health if there's any safety data around these at all? It just seems to be a bit perplexing that with vehicles on roads, there's safety data and modelling and crash impact assessments that are done. But if we then put motorised vehicles that are quite heavy on these paths, it just seems to be perplexing that no state government agency has any modelling. So do you think we could inquire with the relevant departments whether there is?
Dr. Carson?
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, as Mr. Alcock has indicated, we can approach the Department of Health to see if they've got any information.
Councillor Hutton?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, I just want to request that if an alternate is being made up, that it includes the city taking an advocacy position to WALGA around the enforcement of e-rideable rules. The strict enforcement modelling has been previously provided to that effect. If that's not going to be included in an alternate, I would like either an amendment or an additional alternative to be prepared that includes that wording. Thank you.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm sure we can provide some wording in relation to that and include that within the PACs. Yes.
Pertinent members, any other questions? Councillor Ventura.
Thank you. Through you, just a couple. I'm looking for some greater clarification on the potential or expected revenue generated from this game, or some modelling of what we can potentially be looking at as it progresses. Do we have any kind of insights from a revenue perspective?
Can I just check, Councillor Chilton, you mean revenue for the city or for the operator?
Well, for the city based on the high usage.
Mr. Woodcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. We that, we probably won't be able to run any modelling. What we can do is, I know that the City of Stirling have certainly run some estimates and some modelling and some feedback from businesses. We have circulated that in the past and we'll recirculate that.
Based on that, can we also, if that question's been proposed to the City of Stirling, can we also potentially ask the question of the benefits of that revenue and where that's been injected back in potentially into their own city and see the benefits of that revenue? Is that a possibility?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. I think that would be very difficult. I will attempt to find out what the City of Stirling has and what modelling they've done,
okay.
And we will try and apply what we think is possible here.
Yep.
But there's a that's very difficult. That's like saying there's going to be a new taxi service in the city. What's the impact of that going to be? So that you can't really tell. But we'll get some information from Stirling and other local governments, and we'll see if we can model it up for what impact on Joondalup.
Okay, just a couple more.
Councillor Chalk, proceed.
Pertaining to the local jobs, can we potentially identify what that number looks like for this for the local area? There's obviously the mention of increasing local jobs. Can we get a bit of a number on that?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you. And through the Deputy Mayor, there will be two types of jobs created, some direct and indirect.
Mm-hmm.
We would be asking that the provider actually operates from the City of Joondalup, so we would expect a direct number of jobs. We won't know that until we appoint. That will be part of the expression of interest, and that I expect would be in the order of 1, 2, or 3 jobs. Then there will be indirect jobs, and that would be something that would probably pertains more to your previous question about the economic impact, which would be a result of any increase in expenditure. That is obviously more difficult to ascertain. We probably wouldn't be able to run necessarily firm numbers on that, but that would be a consequence of increased expenditure results in increased jobs. I won't be able to get numbers on that, but only the direct jobs.
Councillor Ventura.
Yeah, just one final question. Obviously, the e-scooters do develop some kind of data. So the data that's generated from the usage via the app or the GPS, does the city have access to the analytics for city insights, especially when it comes to working out what's the hotspots, how these things are working well for tourism perspectives? There's some definite benefits there from that data. Are we able to access that data or be given information pertaining to that?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you. And yes, through the Deputy Mayor, yes, we will certainly be able to. The intention is, and the paper alludes to the idea that the scooters themselves will have a lot of that data, and they will collect that. The City of Joondalup won't have access to that data. That is the business's data, and they'll have that. We will put in the EOI the expectation that the provider provides us with the analysis that data provides. So we don't want any of their data. That's a space we don't want to be in. But it would tell us, I think, exactly as you've alluded to, where are the hotspots, what are the high route passages, so what are the times through particular areas, what are the dwell times, all those sorts of things. So we can get that information, but not individual scooter data, because we don't want to analyse that, but it will be a requirement for them to analyse it and provide us with the information that we request. So there will be a lot of information we'll get out of this.
A question for myself. I'm referring to page 23, the attachment showing the potential prescribed Area 2 in the Joondalup CBD. Could I request, please, that in the pack we receive the same map with a scale on it so we can accurately see what the size of that area is? And can I also request that we have superimposed on there the free cat bus service route?
Yes, thank you. And to yourself, thank you for that question. Yes, a scale will be provided, and we could certainly give a it's a very high-level map, so we'll give a if the Deputy Mayor is happy, we would give a high-level route of the cat bus, yes.
And perhaps also just confirm the times that the cat bus operates as well. That would be appreciated. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So we'll provide that in words. The cat bus operates on a regular schedule, so we'll provide that schedule.
Thank you. Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Through you, there's been some discussion in Council around, in strategy sessions previously, around about the actual strict criteria in which the scheme operates. For example, a fixed bays where the scooters must be parked,
infrastructure to make sure they're parked upright. With the current recommendation, where will those finer details be finalised, and will those finer details come back to council in any form before the trial is actually started? I'm happy to advocate on it, but I'm mostly talking about those requirements of making sure they're not littered in too many places, but there's actually well-selected spots where the parking stations for the e-scooters would be located.
Mr. Wilcott.
Thank you. And through the Deputy Mayor, included into the expression of interest, we would be requesting them to identify the number and proposed location of those parking spots. The expression of interest and the decision on that would then come back to Council for decision. However, once one of the benefits of the type of technology that these scooters have is that if the parking spot is not working because the scooters are not being parked there, then the idea would be to relocate them. That would be proposed at the discretion of the CEO. Otherwise, that is an administrative matter. We would be not able to respond to the community. So it was not intended that the exact parking spots come to the council for decision.
Anything further, Councillor Hutton? Councillors, any further questions? Councillor Rafters.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. A few questions for me. Regarding page 42 and the Dunlop City Centre prescribed area, has there been any initial engagement with stakeholders such as ECU and Department of Transport, etc., as to the potential insurance costs and issues they have with these scooters perhaps being used on their premises? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcott.
Thank you, through the Deputy Mayor. Thanks for that question. No is the very short answer. The intention is, as the paper indicates, that the introduction of an ESS trial through the city centre would only occur after that consultation had happened. That consultation has not yet happened, as Council has not indicated yet that it would like to engage in a trial.
Councillor Rafters.
Thank you. Follow-up question to probably some prior ones. Page 43, there's a statement made that e-scooters supplied through rideshare service provide a safe method of travel. Do we have the supporting data for that statement?
Ms. Wilcott?
If I understand the question you're asking, do we have the data that we ask them that they provide a safe method of travel, that is the equivalent of asking a contractor who would be coming to work on a city asset that they provide a safe work site. So we expect that from a contractor that comes to work on a building, and we say you've got to provide a safe work site. We ask an ESS operator that they provide a safe mode of travel. The way in which they do that would be part of their submission, and that would be an assessment criteria as to how they're going to address that, and we would assess that at that time.
Councillor Rafters, anything else?
To follow up on that, I'm referring to it's the officer's report that makes that statement. So are we making a statement on the basis that we will be requesting that they are providing a safe, or are we advising the council that that e-scooters do provide safe regardless? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcott.
Thank you. And so I think we're saying that the e-scooters supply that with the expectation is that they provide a safe, efficient and low-cost method of travel. That is the research, that is the indication from the e-scooter providers, that's the indication from the organisations that allow e-scooter operators to operate in their area, that these are safe. Everyone's definition of safe is there zero incidents. I don't think that's true, but riding a bike is not always 100% safe. They are safe methods of travel, and we would be asking the e-scooter provider to provide an indication as to how they're going to ensure that the service they provide meets the standard of being a safe method of providing.
Councillor Raptors.
Thank you. So following confirmation that there's reports and research that they are safe, is that able to be provided through to the elected members that this report has been based upon?
Mr. Wilcock.
Sorry, I'm not sure I quite understand the... Sorry, the Deputy Mayor, I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
I'll ask Councillor Raptors to repeat the question, please.
Certainly. Mr. Wilcock just made the statement that there's research supporting that rideshare service, that e-scooters are safe. So I'm just asking that, obviously, that research was used by the officers to write the comment and the statement that they are safe. So can that be provided, that research, to justify the report statement, please?
Therese Carson.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, to assist Mr. Wilcock here, the use of e-scooters has been approved by the state government subject to certain rules. The assessment in terms of the use of those type of e-rideables has been assessed by the state government, therefore that subject to certain conditions, speeds, etc., it is a safe and, adding the words from the report, convenient method of transportation. No different to a motor vehicle that would have also some element of risk. There is, and there will be an element of risk using any motorized or any other vehicle. But the assessment in terms of this, of the safety and how it's used is assessed by the state government. The city is just operating within those rules.
Thank you, Director Carson. Councillor Raftis, do you have anything further?
Thank you. I'll take that as... No, in terms of the statement around easing pressure on parking requirements and road congestion in high traffic areas, do we have any supporting evidence, say, from the City of Stirling that supports that it eased parking and traffic issues, say, perhaps around the Scarborough Beach area, from their trials? Thank you.
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. No, we don't have any evidence of that. E-scooters are one of those type of activities that are a last mile. There are many other forms of that, walking public transport, riding bikes. They all try to ease congestion. It is one of those methods. I'm not aware of any evidence to show that, but it is similar to all the other last mile methods of transport.
Thank you. Councillor Raftis, any other questions?
Yes, thank you. Further on the next section, again, I'm going to ask, do we have any evidence from the City of Stirling regarding how permitting an ESS it does increase visitation to the city coastline?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you. Through the Deputy Mayor, yes, as we asked the City of Stirling with some of the other evidence, I will absolutely endeavour to ask for similar. Yes.
Thank you. Councillor Raftis.
Thank you. In terms of an ESS in the Dunlop City Centre, do we have any feedback from the city businesses, given as we're fairly active in terms of activating the city area, do we have any feedback around their support for an ESS in the CBD area?
Mr. Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. At this stage, we haven't undertaken any formal surveys. Anecdotal evidence and discussion with them and with city businesses and with some of the other stakeholders, users, for instance, you know, student groups, have indicated that they have a desire and would like to see more last-mile transport and hireable e-scooters. So anecdotal, the answer is yes. We don't have any formal surveys that we have completed. The intention is to complete the surveys and do community consultation as part of the trial, as indicated in the paper.
Councillor Raftis.
Thank you. I was hoping the last one. In terms of the structure of the City of Stirling arrangement, do we have any understanding of how that's based, and is that purely around recovering a cost for parking locations where the scooters are, or do they generate revenue for this through their ESS through other means?
Mr. Wilcock.
Yes, thank you. And through the Deputy Mayor, yes, we have had confidential discussions with the City of Stirling in that. Theirs isn't around compensation for the parking areas. They are really have just sought a fee for service. So they achieve something akin to a fee for the number of scooters and number of kilometres that the scooters move around the city centre. That's fairly similar to other discussions we've had with other local governments as well.
Thank you. Are we done, Councillor Rufters?
Last one, just as a follow-up to that question, if I may, Mr Deputy Mayor, in terms of if they and other cities are basing it upon that sort of method, why are we looking within our procurement process to only request a fee for parking locations?
Mr Wilcock.
Thank you. And through the Deputy Mayor, I think we weren't indicating that. I think we were indicating that the fee would act as a proxy for that. We put that in there, the parking locations, because that had been a matter raised by councillors about the parking locations. It's one of the reasons why you would do that. We would propose to go out, as the paper indicates, to go out for a procurement method, and we would ask them to nominate a fee for the use of the scooters in the same way. That's the same way that the City of Perth, City of Stirling went out. So I apologise if there was confusion in the way we have written that, but that the intention is not to ask them to pay a fee for parking. They are to seek, we are to seek a fee for bringing the service into the city.
Thank you. Councillor Pizzey.
Thank you. Just one question. There is a council in Victoria who has ceased their e-rideable service, and I'm just wondering, as a part of this contract, if we found that it did not suit the City of Joondalup during the trial period, would we be able to cease the contract early?
Thank you. I think you're referring to Melbourne City, and that decision, as far as I know, the decision hasn't yet been made. But thank you.
No.
Mr Wilcock.
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor. Yeah, yes, the answer is yes, we would most certainly have those clauses in there. The way it's actually proposed is that the earliest first phase of the project would be for a small area, and there would be on performance criteria, and the trial wouldn't expand beyond that area for a start if they hadn't met performance criteria, and we would expect there would be strict performance criteria in which we would be able to cancel the use of ESS operator. While you're referring to the Melbourne, there is a West Australian example. We understand Margaret River was 3 months into a 12-month trial and they ceased operation. We would certainly be talking with them about making sure that were they clear and were they legally able to do so, and ensure that we mirrored those clauses, because we absolutely would want to have that clause in there for lack of performance.
Last call for questions. I think Councillor Ventura.
Thank you, through you. A little earlier, there was a discussion to just provide the clarification on speed and weight and a few other factors. When that is put together, can we do a comparison of e-rideable scooters' weight and speed up against an electric bike, weight and speed up against an elderly electric scooter, weight and speed, and up against an electric wheelchair weight and speed, because they are all similar electric vehicles that use the same footpath, and I think it would be a good cross-comparison.
Mr Wilcock?
Thank you, and through the Deputy Mayor, I guess I might want to temper the expectations on that question and the earlier questions. The City of Joondalup doesn't, we do not have the capacity to be able to undertake any of those things. We are going to research and find out what other information out there, and we'll supply to Council what other information exists in the work that's been done. I think that's a very good point the Councillor makes, is that there are obviously lots of different apparatus, different modes of transport that use all of our roads, paths and common share paths. We will find out what information is out there and supply that to Council. The Council is not in a position to be able to run modelling on those things.
Final call for questions, Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr Mayor, Mr Deputy Mayor. Just a quick one that was raised earlier that just brought this question up. So Councillor Raftus made reference to the safety that the officer's comment was, and then it was answered by Director Glasson in relation to cars have inherent risks like everything else. My question would be this, that obviously I drive a car and most other people do. We obviously have to be licensed to drive those cars. We have to undertake training for those. Does the city expect us to understand that the provider of these e-scooter systems or the services that they will be providing, should this be approved by council, will they be undergoing a training program for anyone that wants to ride these bikes, these e-bikes, or not?
Mr. Wilcock.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor, and thanks for the question. When you hire an e-scooter, there are a range of rules that you have to adhere by, and I'm not sure if you've done it, but you do it through, you generally do it through a smartphone, and before you can hop on and before you get access to it, you need to say that you're of a certain age, that you will abide by the state laws, and then we would be looking for, some of them are smarter than others, and we would be looking for the ones that have a training program, and the scooter does not move until you've done a training program on your phone. That would be the extent that we would be looking for the external provider to bring in. This wouldn't be the City of Joondalup obviously providing this service, so we wouldn't be saying what they can and can't do. We would ask them to do it as part of, we would only want a provider that provides the best level of service, and we would expect them to provide that. So that's quite common that you do a training program on your phone before you actually get access to using them.
One final question, Councillor O'Neill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Sorry. Could you also provide an example, maybe a photo snapshot example of this training program, because I've ridden these things and I own a scooter myself, and there's no training program that I've seen where they have to obviously answer the questions and show their competency. It's just tick a box and off you go, which everyone can do. So I'd appreciate if there is a training program that is required before these scooters move an inch, as you say. I'd appreciate maybe something like that in the pack that explains it to us, so that we can be assured that these kids and other people are fully trained to ride these scooters on the streets and roads and footpaths, please.
Mr. Wilcock.
Yes, we can provide that, what the private operators propose to have. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcock. One final question, Karen Cunnington.
Thank you.
It's the last question. Thank you.
Yes, just very briefly on this one. It goes to the officer's comments on saying that the state government sets the safety criteria of this and has been the ones doing the assessments. As far as, but the local government provides the infrastructure, so the roads, the footpaths, and that these scooters will be riding on, because they're not going to be riding on the grass. How do we have any certainty if we don't have any information about braking distances or impact or crash assessments around these, that our infrastructure is appropriate for these as far as the corners, the turns, the materials which the footpaths use? Because usually if it's a road, then it's the Australian standards or to the road, Australian road standards. But with this, there doesn't appear to anything. And the reason why I bring this up is from a risk perspective that we could have adverse actions against the local government for torts of negligence if we're not providing infrastructure which is suitable or safe for these vehicles.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, a very good question, Councillor Kingston. What we have to understand is the state government has assessed the current design standards, my understanding of footpaths, dealers' paths, etc., roads, etc., and they have determined that the use of e-scooters on those paths, based on the current design standards, is appropriate. That's as much as I can give you in terms of that. So from a liability perspective, is with any other vehicle that the state government approved for use on the roads, there are certain requirements. They make an assessment. Certain heavy vehicles are not allowed to use certain roads, etc., and those are the things that they take into consideration when they make the assessment in terms of the use of any vehicle like an e-scooter, a bike, etc. Enforcement, in terms of certainty, enforcement lies with the state government, not with the city. So in terms of certainty that there will be compliance with that, that is similar to motor vehicles, cyclists, etc., need to be enforced by the state government.
Thank you, active members. We'll move on to item 12.6, status of council decisions, June 2024. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftis.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Page 30 of the attachment, page 7, the reference to notice of motion regarding outstanding decisions from council and a reference to the provision of legal actions that may have a contingent liability and are unresolved being reported to council. The latest update says it will be provided by end of 2024. Just wonder, could we have some clarification on what is the time restriction on providing this, given it was put on the agenda from August a year ago? Thank you.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yeah, thank you very much for the question. Unfortunately, the CEO is responsible for ensuring that particular action, so I will have to take that one on notice and provide some information in the pack for you.
Anything further, Councillor Raftis?
Well, as a follow-up to that one, I just wonder if the same information is able to be provided to the auditors who are undertaking our end of financial review and would be gathering such information in order to finalise their processes.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'd have to take that one on notice.
Councillor Raftis. Party members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.7, minutes of regional council meetings. Any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.8, corporate business plan 2023 to 2027, quarter four report. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's a short one on page 257. It's the bushfire management plan. Do we have any understanding if this document will be endorsed by council, given that the last bushfire management plan was not?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, thank you for the question. And Ms. Macario, I'll pass that to her.
Thank you, Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The process that we're proposing is similar to the previous plan, where the plan needs to be endorsed by the Office of Bushfire Risk Management, OBRIM, excuse me, and working with DFES. We can give council and elected members an overview of the plan, but it is very operational in nature. It's quite detailed in terms of all of the city's assets, but we can provide an overview to council of the plan.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. And so has this plan at this stage been submitted to the office yet?
Ms. Macario.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. No, not currently. We're in the process of reviewing the plan. We have engaged a consultant to assist with that work, so it's currently in progress.
Councillor Kingston.
And then following up as well, are there any hindrances to making this plan public? And I asked this previously on the previous bushfire management plan, but are there any hindrances in this plan being public and published with the other environmental plans on the website?
Ms. Macario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. The nature of some of the information within the plan, we would probably not publicly publish the entire document, but we may consider a summary document being published to the community.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Is there an opportunity for elected members to provide any advice on the new plan being created?
Ms. Macario.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, that is something that we can consider and can take that on notice and get back to you.
Anything further, Councillor Kingston?
No, that's it. I'll send an email to the relevant manager.
Thank you.
Just a couple of slides.
Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.10, corporate sponsorship application, Swimming WA Incorporated Open Water Swim Series 2024-25. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's a risk management element to this, is that last summer there were significant algal blooms which occurred, well, things that appeared to be algal blooms at Mullaloo Beach. In the event that sponsorship is given to Swimming WA, what risk management procedures are in place if there's similar incidents this summer?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yep, thank you very much for the question. I will have to take that one on notice and get back to you with regards to some of those risk mitigations and what would occur should the event have to be called off due to some of those risks actually occurring.
Councillor Kingston? Following on that, if it's possible to have a consideration given that rather than calling off the event, a secondary plan to relocate or discussing that with Swimming WA, so either relocating to then have two events at either Sorrento or another suitable beach in Joondalup. Is that a discussion we can have?
Mr. Acting CEO?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, we can have that discussion with the event organisers.
Thank you. Councillor
Kingston.
Thank you. And then following up, could we also get more information on the notification framework which has been created from last summer about when there is an incident in the water relating to public health, how notifications are given to members of the public, because it seemed to be a day-by-day event. So what frameworks do we have currently in place? First of all, if there's an event, who's notified, who's then responsible, who closes the beach or provides advice publicly?
Mr. Atkins, CEO.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We can provide that. It's probably important to note, though, that this is a sponsorship application from Swimming WA, so they will just be one part of the equation. It's not the surf lifesaving clubs who are involved in this. They will be engaged as part of this program, but it's being run by Swimming WA, who will need to take into account those risks. But given the previous experiences, we can provide some further information as to how that operated last year.
Councillor Kingston?
And lastly, yes, look, I'd appreciate just further information on that, given that the how to close the beach is under the city's local property law. So, thank you.
Take that as a question. Could you just confirm, Mr. Acting CEO?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We'll respond to that.
Okay. Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.12, Corporate Sponsorship Application, Movies by Burswood, Inc., Telethon Community Cinemas. Councillors, any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.13, Sponsorship of Significant Event, Joondalup Festival of Motoring 2024. Councillors, any questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just actually curious in relation to this event there. The event road closures seem to carry a lot through social media, as well as there was quite a few people that live in the area that the event was held that vocalised their aggression on the vibrations through their home, things like that. I was wondering if this was to continue, would there be any sort of undertakings with the residents around that area as to addressing their complaints or issues they've had with previous years? In that it does seem to be something that's vocalised on social media.
Oh, that's acting CEO, thank you.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I know of a few incidents. I'm not too sure how widespread it is. But I do know that following the 2022 event, the organiser spent a lot of time liaising with residents to try and address their particular concerns. And there were a couple that I don't know that it went to quite significant efforts to be able to try and meet with them and try to ameliorate those particular concerns. So that is very much a focus of the organiser to ensure that residents' concerns are addressed and to try and lessen the impacts upon them as this event progresses. But I think it's going to be difficult to be 100% to give surety with regard to every particular resident, but I can tell you that the efforts that the organiser does go to are quite lengthy.
Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. Just one other further thing. It was the 2024 event outcome reading on page 94 here that Lakeside Joondalup Shopping Centre indicated the centre's traffic was up on the Sunday compared to the same day last year by 1.7%. Was the event not held at a different time last year, the previous year before that, when they obviously made the assumption of that up by 1.7. And further to that, the 1.7% increase, is that in relation to parking in the centre? How was that gauged that they can make such a statement that it's 1.7% increase? Could it not just be that there was nowhere else accessible for these people because of traffic shutdowns and road closures?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the statement is not coming from the event organisers, it's coming from Lakeside Joondalup Shopping Centre as well. So that is evidence that is provided by themselves as to the impact. In the first year, there were discussions with Lakeside over the impact on their parking arrangements and access to their facility as well. I think through discussions with the organisers and Lakeside, they've managed to have positive outcomes, and Lakeside Shopping Centre has indicated that from their tenants' perspectives, that it is up 1.7% based on the previous Sunday that the event was held.
Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. This is looking at the KPIs and the measurements of the KPIs. So for the one relating to attendance, I'm just trying to understand the baseline numbers for the paths data catchment locations. So that's on page 614. And I'm just trying to understand, do we have any baseline data for those same days, either for last year or, say, the weekend before? Because there's about 800 residents that live in that location and there'd be ordinary movements of people. So I'm just trying to understand, when we say that there's been 20,000 people there, how much that is an increase from the event and how much is that just regular traffic in the location?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'm not sure whether the paths will be able, whether we have access to being able, because we have in the middle of a trial with the paths until September 2024. So I may be able to ask our economic development team whether they can have a snapshot of the indications of the mobile phone data that is captured within the area on the days or on a normal weekend. But to try and separate it out, that indicates the number of mobile phones because it takes up upon that data within that particular area. So trying to separate that out, we have not been able to do for that specific event. Whether we do have that baseline information, I would need to clarify. But even if it was 800, the KPI has still been met.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Yes, even if it's a baseline looking at, say, if it's last weekend or a weekend recently, it'd be much more than 800 people that have movements usually in these areas. But further from that, as far as the shapes that are being used here, it says here that roughly for each day there were 6,000 to 7,000 people in the Joondalup City Centre and then 2,500 in Central Park. But it seems to be if these shapes are being measured separately rather than together, if you moved between one shape and the other, you'd be double counted. So, for example, I was there. I actually had two phones on me and I parked in the city centre and then I walked over to Central Park and I'd be counted as four attendees, based on how this is being calculated. So I'm just trying to understand, have we done a calculation for the city centre and Central Park as one shape? And same with Collier Pass, all as one contiguous shape? Measuring them all separately.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you very much for the question. I will need to take that one on notice so I can have a look at the data and provide you with some further information as to how that assessment is undertaken.
Further questions, Councillor Kingston?
Yes, and then as far as the accuracy of the paths data, is there a certain margin of error on this? So say when a boundary is drawn for a shape and then the calculation of the number of mobile phones which entered into that shape over some period, what is the margin of error of the boundaries of that shape? Is it 5 metres, 10 metres, 20 metres? And does it also capture cars that might move through? And, you know, the reason why I raise this is some of these ones could capture people, say, going into the hospital. So, do we know what
Mr. Acting CEO, is that question taken on notice?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I will take that one on notice and see whether there is margins of error that are taken into account in the determination of the results that are provided within here.
And thank you. Further on the KPIs for the attendance, it says here that there was under activations, this is on page 615, that there were 700 vehicles for classic cars and coffee. And I'm just wondering how these were laid out on the different sites, because looking at the car parks, is that 700 cars that were exhibited? Because I'm not sure how you could fit them in the car parks where the exhibits were. Or is that the number of cars which people who were volunteering for the classic cars and coffee? Because I'm just
acting
it's hard to sort of understand what these numbers mean.
Three, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I will take that one on notice as well if you are after such specifics. Yes.
Thank you. And
are you close to the end, Councillor?
Yes, I'll just go with this one. One last question, and then I'll let other councillors follow. As far as the northern boundary of this, so on Shenton Avenue, there was a lot of congestion problems which were related to me that the road backed up on the entry into the hospital. Going forward, if this is proposed for next year, does the event organizer have any thoughts on how to better manage that traffic? Because it banked up from the entry of the hospital all the way back to Dunlop Drive and across.
Mr. Atkins here.
So just the safety issue of people getting to the hospital.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I think that is definitely identified as one of the challenges which the event organiser had to endure. And within the report, it also mentions there with regard to event messaging, particularly around the road closures, they believe it didn't necessarily filter down to all staff at the Joondalup Health Campus, and that was compounded by the closure of additional car park entrances due to construction work. So there was certainly acknowledged that there was pressure on Shenton Avenue, and yes, I did hear feedback that some members of the Joondalup Health Campus weren't aware of the event that was occurring. So there had been a lot of liaison with the Joondalup Health Campus, and when the event proceeds forward, I'm sure that will be one of the things that is front of mind with the organiser to ensure that safe access to the hospital is critical for the success of the event.
Team members, any further questions? Councillor Hutton.
Just a few questions. First question is just in regards to the attendance numbers. I know there's been previous questions asked about validity of those numbers, but just in regards to the city's matrix that's applied, if there were to be 20,000 people in attendance, given there was a sponsorship application we dealt with before, which had an estimated 16,000 to 18,000, the 25,000 sponsorship, and we dealt that, you know, that should only get 13,000, how do we justify an event of 20,000, which is, you know, 20% more, getting a sponsorship factor of, you know, 200 times?
So I think
20 times, some of it.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, this event is not a corporate sponsorship, and it hasn't been assessed under the corporate sponsorship guidelines. It is a significant event for which there was a specific EOI process, numerous council decisions with regard to the type of event that would be held, a number of sessions with elected members, establishment of key performance indicators in relation to that event, and the council signed off on the event, and we entered a sponsorship agreement based upon the KPIs that the council requested to have. For elected members' information, at the policy committee just gone, we presented some draft policies in relation to corporate sponsorship and in relation to significant event sponsorship as well, which is going to be presented to elected members in the very near future. So that will be an opportunity for the council to determine what the parameters might be for corporate sponsorship and for significant event sponsorship. And if the council is after more significant numbers in relation to significant events, that's the opportunity to be able to demonstrate or indicate when development of that policy is made, some of the parameters that should be provided around it.
Yes, thanks for that.
Councillor Hutton?
Yes, so just on KPIs, obviously stated just there, which were set by, I guess, the council. KPI financial economic benefit, from what I can tell from this, and I just want to see if this is correct interpretation, the council has set a KPI, and then we have determined that KPI has been met using numbers which we admit by our own wording have no basis of making those assumptions. So, for example, the $65 spent on by the average person on food and beverages, is there any basis for that number, or is that just an estimation that we've come up with in order to deem the KPI has been met?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. For the economic benefit, we usually use, or we will use, the National Institute of Economic and Industry Research website, which informs us with regard to the economic benefit that is provided from particular events. So that is one of the key mechanisms that we utilise to be able to demonstrate what financial impact is on the city. And then we've provided a number of variations based on low level to what could be considered a high level to be able to demonstrate what that impact might be.
Yeah, thanks for that. Just following
Councillor Hutton, any further questions?
Yeah, just following on from that, has there actually been a discussion with any of the businesses that were operating through the weekend to determine what the actual benefit was from an economic perspective?
Distracting CEO.
Thank you very much for the question, and I think the feedback that we have received from businesses has been overwhelmingly positive from those that did open on the day. We do try to encourage all of the local businesses to be able to open and participate in the benefits that are provided, but the feedback that we have received from businesses has been positive with regard to the trade during the day. However, we don't have specific numbers as to what their trade might actually be.
Yeah.
And so, Hutton, anything?
Yeah, just two quick final questions. The first one is to do with the impact of the change of the date. Without casting an opinion, would the administration accept that attendance and promotion of the event was not up to standard? And was it possible that that was because of the delay in the initial event taking place and the short time span in which the eventual event took place?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Thank you very much for the question through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Now, I think we were quite satisfied with the number of people who attended the event. Of course, we would always like more, but we did set that minimum benchmark at 15,000 to ascertain the success of the event, and I believe that the event managed to attract more than that, so I would consider that a success.
And final question, if I may, Deputy Mayor. Just in regards to the shopping centre car park, my understanding is there was a lot of promotion around the event about not using the shopping centre car park if you were attending the event. Inevitably, people used the shopping centre car park to attend the event, which resulted in extended waits to exit the car park, and I've heard that report from a lot of locals. I'm wondering if, given that inevitability, if there's any steps that can be taken in the future to accept that whether we tell people to use the car park or not, they're going to use it, and whether or not steps can be taken to make sure that the traffic flows smoothly.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yeah, thank you very much for the question, and I think I outlined it in one of the previous questions, just with regard to the liaison with the shopping centre. I think back in the first event that was held, there were issues with regard to parking within the shopping centre. And I think since that time, not only the shopping centre but the event organisers have worked very well together in consultation with the city as well to try and iron out the issues which emanated from that first event, which related to access to and from the car park. That was one of the key ones for Lakeside Shopping Centre. So I believe from their perspective, all of those things were managed between themselves and the event organiser to the satisfaction of the centre for the 2024 event.
Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just one that was raised from the statements that have been made. There was made mention of a website that gathers the information of people that that frequent the district on those days. I was just wondering what that website is. Secondly, how does it actually know who attended the events and how much they spent? Do they have access to particular things? And finally to that, do we subscribe to this particular website? Do we have a subscription service with them? Do we pay a fee for it? And if so, how much?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor. So that information is gathered through a website, or we do subscribe to ID, which provides information on our website, which is accessible to all businesses and members of the community. We have subscriptions in relation to economy, community, and I think there are some other ones as well, that are open for businesses throughout the City of Joondalup to be able to utilise, which contains a range of economic data which should assist them in understanding the economic environment of the City of Joondalup, particularly for prospective businesses which wish to enter the City of Joondalup market. With regard to the... and so you can get... I will provide the website... the City of Joondalup has on its website access to those particular those areas, so I can provide those links to you in the briefing pack. With regard to the subscriptions, I can also provide in the briefing pack the subscriptions and the amount that relate to those subscriptions as well.
Councillor Hutton, can I ask you to turn off your microphone, please? Councillor O'Neill, done. Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. On page 100 of the report and on the subsequent page, two of the comments received that are quoted seem to make reference to the classic cars aspect of the event. One of those was the venue felt a lot better than the usual UWA events. I'm assuming that wasn't referring to the car racing. Just wondering, has the city taken any feedback from this to look at perhaps engaging on these classic cars turning up for show and coffee throughout the year as part of a CBD activation process?
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor. Thank you for the question, and I understand the classic cars was a significant success, and I think that your suggestion could be one that the city could examine with regard to future activation activities. There are a number of classic car clubs that exist throughout Perth, and they hold a range of events at different local governments, so there may be opportunities here for the city to be able to conduct something within the city for activation areas. So it may be something that Mr. Wilcock would like to take on board at some point together with our marketing teams.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I believe and could be confirmed that if the KPIs are deemed, argued that they've been delivered and the city is budgeted for a major event, that we are contractually obliged to hold this event again at least one more time. And is the timing of the budget process and the delivery of this report after the budget process put us in a difficult position? Thank you.
Mr. Acting CEO.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I think what might assist elected members who are new to the council is the provision of the legal advice that was provided last year when a similar question was asked with regard to the terms of agreement, and particularly clause, I think it is 2.4, relates to conditional agreement, and the legal advice that we provided at that time was with regard to the number of conditions. If they were satisfied, then the city was under an obligation to continue to support the event. And I think it might be important for new elected members to understand some of the implications in relation to the decision that was taken at the time and the obligations under the sponsorship agreement that the city would only pursue conducting events in years 2 and 3, or as it is now, year 3, when those obligations and terms of the agreement are actually met.
Councillor Baptist. Team members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.14, financial activity statement for June 2024. Any councillor, any questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I've got a few questions on this one. Page 632. 5A, the reference to Craigie Leisure Centre membership fees, $478,000 increase. That seems to pick up the figure from the variance above. So just seeing, is that correct? And are we able to get a full P&L performance on the Craigie Leisure Centre for the financial year, please?
Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm happy to take that, Deputy Mayor. I'm happy to take that question. Notice and provide the information, thanks.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Further to that, page 63, employment costs, salary and wages, we exceeded budget for the year. I think it's been a while since we may have done that. Can we get a breakdown and including the effects of any payments made under the EBA, which I thought had not been finalised as yet?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, there's no impacts as yet from the EBA. That would be minimal. The largest change to budgeting for salaries and wages was we centralised the vacancy credit and increased it to meet previous requests to budget tighter on salaries and wages. And yes, we have exceeded, and we'll provide a detailed breakdown on that once the end of year accruals are run. We're expecting it to be less than 1% overall, though.
Councillor Loftus.
Thank you. Just wondering if I'll be able to get a breakdown of the professional fees and costs, actual versus what was proposed to be within the budget, to understand where we managed to save $1.3 million on those matters.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, that item's come to my attention too. Finance staff are working on a breakdown at the moment, business unit by business unit, asking for information from business unit managers. It is worth noting, though, that that is the cash situation as at 30 June. It is likely that a number of those contracts are ongoing and will result in carry forwards being put into the year-end figures, which will see those amounts brought forward to the next financial year. But, yes, we can provide a breakdown, and that would be done as part of the year-end reporting process.
Councillor Raftus, anything further?
Certainly, on page 634, item K around computer software subscriptions, can we get a breakdown around that unfavourable variance of $388,000? Computer software licences unfavourable, $124,000. And Datacom links unfavourable, $65,000.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll start with the last one. First, unfavourable variance, and I will provide information on this tax law, Councillor Raftus. The final unfavourable variance was requirement to upgrade hardware or security hardware early. The remaining two are associated with Project Axiom. We'll provide a detailed breakdown for elected members once we've consulted with the auditors about what part of that can be capitalised and what has to remain in operating.
Councillor Raftus.
Thank you. Page 635 regarding favourable variance. On electricity for a number of roads, 360k. Just wondered if you can clarify what is meant by a number of roads.
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I don't believe that number will be in the final financial figures. The billing cycle for Western Power saw the bills come in early, or coming in early July, so there will be an accrual for the street lighting, effectively, which is what that amount is.
Anything further, Councillor Raftus?
Yes, please. Capital contributions. In terms of the variations on the Sorrento bowling turf, $98,000, and Iluka bowling green upgrade, $148,000.
Chris Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the question notice to provide details, but there was projects running with those two community organisations and their contributions have either come in early or have increased slightly as the request for the project increased. But I'll provide details in the pack.
Thank you, Councillor Ruff. Just how many more questions that you may have on this?
Two more, if I may, please.
Okay.
Page 637, reference to public art, $362,000 favourable variance. Just wonder if we get some clarity on that one too, please.
No time for you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, I'll provide information. Thanks.
Councillor Loftus.
And as our last one, if I could get some detail breakdown on page 641, it's reference to rates outstanding, sundry debtors and other receivables of $20 million, up from $3.4 million June 12 months prior. So just if we can get a breakdown of that significant increase from 3 to 20 million, please.
That's Humphrey.
Sorry, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if we can get a page reference and line reference.
Councillor Loftus.
Page 641, closing funds, part 22.
Chris Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take that question on notice. It is likely to do with timing of payment of rates, but I will take the question on notice for details.
Thank you. Let's see, members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's a short one. It's about the impairment and write-off of assets for the favourable variance of $1.2 million on page 635.
And the question?
Could I just get a further breakdown of that?
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, a further breakdown will be provided, but it is to do with the timing of the structure projects and the decommissioning of assets at the request.
13 members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Rushton?
Just one overriding query, if I can, through you. Mr. Deputy Mayor, is the reports are here to provide us with some information, and just wondering how we can rely upon them if there's a substantial number of variations that we expect the numbers to change as the audit completes. How are we supposed to make use of this on a monthly basis? Thank you.
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the comment on board, but to explain the difference, the June 23 figures will have included all the year-end accruals and calculations that are done during the year-end process. The June 24 figures will be brought figures straight out of the system. What we will do for future years to deal with that particular issue is we will include the previous year figures exactly as they came out of the system at that point, and then what the accruals are, so council will be able to see year-to-date figures as they are, and then what the accruals did. So we'll take that question on board and provide a different report next year so that can be referenced by elected members.
Thank you, Director Humphrey. Last call for any questions on this item. If not, we'll move on to item 12.15, list of payments made during the month of June 2024. Councils, any questions on this item? Councillor Raffles.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Query on page 654, if I could. Career Life Transitions, $17,600, please.
Director Humphrey.
Actually, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take that question on notice.
Thank you. Councillor Ruff, anything further?
Yes, page 655, Civic Legal, $29,328.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, again, I'll take that question on notice as it relates to legal matters.
Thank you. Councillor Raftis, anything further?
I saw page 650, Big W, purchase of gift vouchers, $615.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, again, I'll take the question on notice, but gift vouchers are typically used as prizes or incentives for various community events, so I'll take the question on notice but provide details.
Thank you. Councillor Raftis, anything further? Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. It's on page 676, Jackson McDonald, legal fees to $7,400. If we could just understand the matter which is involved.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, we'll provide the matters involved in the PACS this Friday.
Councillor Kingston, you can further.
Thank you. And then also on page 676, there's Jay Abison and others, professional services for $3,800. And then also for the same company, there's $2,754 legal fees. Could I also get an understanding of the legal matters involved in this?
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, yes, we'll provide that information to PACS.
Thank you.
Thirty members, any further questions? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just my question is in relation to the vouchers and prizes and things like that. I was wondering if we could please be provided in the PACS the amounts of money that we set aside and versus what we actually do spend on these sort of gift vouchers and things, and who they are for exactly, like the schools, and we could get an itemised list out of what we've. Because every month we seem to be spending a little bit here, a little bit there, or a little bit more, or a little bit less, and there seems to be no sort of set amounts per month. I was just wondering if there's a reason to that, and if we could get some more information in relation to all these gift cards.
Great time for you.
And through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the amounts of gift cards are set within the operating budgets for various services. So off the top of my head, the most likely service you'll see that at is Craigie Leisure Centre, various libraries, various community development type projects, youth services, for example, where they'll use these sorts of prizes rather than other prizes to reward program participants or people who've done particularly well. The other time these types of vouchers are used are for on-the-spot recognition for staff members through the employee reward and recognition program. I will try and provide as much detailed information on Friday as we can in the PACS, and we also have engaged the city's internal auditor to review the vouchers and how they're stored and secured for program use.
Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.16, card transactions for the month of June 2024. Any questions on this item? Councillor Rafters.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. At page 739, the reference to Officeworks to purchase prepaid Visa cards because the credit card wouldn't seemingly be available. So just wondering how that then is accounted back into this same report to clarify how those funds were utilised.
Director Humphrey.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the question on notice and provide the details. So there was a period of absence where a staff member who holds the corporate hospitality card wasn't able to attend work. In order for those functions to proceed, there was prepaid credit cards purchased. It was considered the safest way to control that particular expenditure, but we've had the question on notice and provide detailed information in the PACS.
Councillor Rufus, anything further?
Similar transactions on the same card, gift cards, and Coles for $565. Further down, another $1,000 gift cards. Following on requested similar things. How do we control and account for all these regular gift card purchases? Thank you.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, I'll take the question notice and provide the information. Thanks.
Thank you. Councillor Rufus, anything further?
No, you can just carry on to the next page, 740 of Officeworks. $1,000, Coles Group, $800, Officeworks, another $800. So just in this month, significant spend in that area. Thank you.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, as mentioned previously, we have asked internal auditors to look into how these gift cards are stored and secured, and we will provide reconciliation.
Thank you. Councillor Rufter, anything further? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. My question is actually in relation to the security of those cards. You made mention that the card wasn't available for use due to a staff member not being around or something. Is there a method by which the credit cards could be stored within the City of Joondalup premises? I'm just thinking, obviously, of people's wallets getting lifted and things, and when people aren't there to use the cards for these purchases. Is there backup methods? And what do we have in place in terms of a policy for security for those small but obviously important things.
Director Humphrey.
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, the issue is when a card is issued to a particular person, only that person can authorise expenditure. So in the instance where someone is away from work in an unplanned way and they're the holder of that particular card, no other staff member can use that card. As far as security of the cards go, yes, the purchasing card is retained within city premises and secured. The other cards have lower limits and reside with the person. But the issue in that particular example was the person wasn't able to authorise the expenditure, and under Australian banking law, only the holder of the card can actually authorise the expenditure.
Thank you. Anything further, Councillor O'Neill?
Yeah, sorry, I'm just a little confused that it was authorised on that card, but the card wasn't available. Sorry, could you just explain that a little bit further for me? Was it preemptively known that that person wouldn't be available, so those gift cards were purchased? And then further to that, were all the monetary, was all the money that was assigned to those cards accounted for and checked back in?
Director Humphrey.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, the city holds four cards. One card is assigned to the person who does the purchasing for corporate events and functions. My understanding is that person wasn't able to attend work, and very little notice was able to be provided. In that case, I believe the purchasing credit card was used to buy prepaid cards to allow that particular function of the city to continue, and a reconciliation was completed.
Anything further, Councillor Mill? Party members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.18, portable ground lighting system. Any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 12.19. We have a presentation from Director Humphrey. Thank you.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I will do the presentation as it relates to a project within the Infrastructure Services Directorate. The purpose of this report is for Council to consider the last of four tenders, which is the most significant component of the Duncraig Adventure Hub development, being the overall landscape component. This tender includes the overall coordination of the programming between the overlapping works on the other three tenders, traffic management, minor demolition that's not included in the forward works program, minor bulk earthworks that's not included in the forward works program, installation of underground services, major elements such as the big shelters, the toilet facilities, electrical switch rooms, the new playground, the roller disco space, and then the landscaping around the bike and skate facilities, to mention most of the key items within that. The other three tenders are for the skate facility and the bike facility, which was awarded in March 2024, and the civil works component, which was awarded in June 2024. Following consideration of a notice of motion, Council at its meeting held on 28 March resolved to progress the detailed design of the other youth facility and commence construction within the 23-24 financial year, and works commenced on the 24th of June. The City provided an update to elected members on the overall project cost at the March strategy session, which estimated the construction component of the project at $8.13 million. To clarify the overall cost, the project management cost was reported to Council at the major projects, which the total cost was $8.5 million, which included $370,000 for the design and project management. The increase since March is in the main contract, the subject of this report to Council, which has seen an increase of approximately $1.1 million when compared to the previous its estimates, which can be attributed to the following. Approximately 10% across-the-board increases on the majority of line items in comparison to the QS estimate, which was done in March approximately 6 months ago. This is unfortunately reflective of the escalation experience in most of the landscape projects over the last year. Substantial markup on proprietary items such as benches, play equipment, which are purchased directly by the contractor from suppliers. The supply price of these items were fixed and available at the time of estimating, providing a reliable indicator on where price increases are occurring. The independent quantity surveyor estimated a 15% markup on these items, which is the industry standard, to cover warranty installation and profit margin. However, the markup within the contractor's tender is much higher than this, which contributes to the increases. Significant higher prices than the QS estimate for items fabricated by the contractor, including the shade structures and the construction of retaining walls. And with the increase in project value, the increase in contingency value overall for the project. The report considers there is a reduction of scope. However, taking this action will impact on the value of Lottery West grant funding, which was assessed against the full scope of works. Additionally, the city, and this has only became apparent after the conclusion of the, or the writing of the project, the city has been shortlisted for $950,000 of the additional grant funding from the federal government Play Our Way funding. Again, this funding, although not yet approved, is contingent on the delivery of the scope, including the role of the scope. The officer's recommendation therefore requests council to consider awarding the tender without reducing the scope of the works, noting that the funding shortfall will be addressed as part of the mid-year budget review. If the city is successful in securing the federal government Play Our Way grant funding, as alluded to earlier, the shortfall will be reduced to less than $200,000. Happy to take any questions, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Director Carson. Let the members any questions, Director Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you. I'd like to obviously seek an amendment on this in point one, that it's subject to the Play Our Way grant being approved. I'm not sure whether that requires that this particular item would have to be referred back. I was wondering if we can seek some clarity.
Checking CEO, would that be to Dr. Carson? Dr. Carson.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, the way the contract is set up is with the works already commenced on the bike and the skate facility, it will impact on those contracts and likely impact on potential claims against the city. So, and that's why the officer's recommendation is to award a tender and not delay awarding the tender. And as we've said, we were seeking additional grant funding to try and cover the shortfall of the project.
Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. So I'd just like some clarity further. It was a $1.128 million extra over 5 months only. I'm just wondering with the tenders that were obviously sought, what the time frame for acceptance of those tenders was and why the city didn't see in a market like this, in an environment like this, that they wouldn't obviously extend the deadlines for those tenders being accepted when they knew that they could get them here to council for us to discuss, and instead allowing them to obviously have such short deadlines where they can then increase from $8.5 million to $9.6 million, and we basically have to wear it in the teeth.
Director Cousin?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I struggle to understand the question. If Councillor O'Neill could just repeat that.
Yeah, if I can help. So I think what perhaps you're alluding to here is the terms and conditions of the tender submitted in terms of the commercial rates quoted and the validity of those dates for those quotes. Would you like to rephrase the question to just make it clear? Thank you.
Yes, pretty much exactly as you've stated there. The tenders, obviously, and the time frame of those tenders being accepted. Clearly, this has been with the city for a while, and it was known that it wouldn't come here through to council for approval for quite some time. And yet they've been allowed through, obviously, contractual misreadings or something to now amend their quotes from $8.5 million to $9.62 million. And
Stop here for a moment. I'll just ask a question myself just to make this clear. Have the contractors submitted a single price, or have they changed their price since they tendered? That needs clarifying, please.
Okay, Mr. Deputy Mayor, I think the confusion in here is there is a number of separate contracts that was awarded here. The first two contracts was awarded in March. This contract or this tender was advertised in May. The prices came in, and there's no increase on the prices. We're comparing the prices with the estimate that we provided to elected members in March. The estimate was an independent quality surveyor estimate or quantity surveyor estimate on the project value. However, it's dependent on the market. This is not a change on the validity period, a change in the rates by the contractors. These are the rates that's been tendered by the contractors. So there's no change in their rates.
So if that helps. Yeah, so
does clarify it. Thank you.
Prices quoted by the tenderers have been quoted and haven't changed. And there's discrepancies with the estimates. Yeah, thank you. Councillors, any further questions on this item? Councillor Raftus.
Yes, thank you, Deputy Mayor. Page 135, so these items, if they were taken out, would achieve being able to deliver it for $8.5 million? Could that clarify, please?
That's custom.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, that would assist in bringing the budget back into $8.5 million. However, that puts at risk the grant funding, so you'll most probably lose approximately the same amount in grant funding from Lotteries West. The Rollers Disco is absolutely the part of the federal government play our way grant funding, so you will not be eligible for the grant funding then from the state government. So the risk here is that even if you reduce the scope, you're still going to overspend on the overall funding availability or the city's contribution. And with not reducing the scope, there's actually a likelihood that we can reduce the over expenditure by the additional grant funding that might be available through that funding stream.
Councillor Rifters.
Yes, thank you. How big is the roller disco area, please?
Fritz Cosson.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll take that on notice and provide a bit of a sketch on the area and the size of that.
Councillor Rogers.
Thank you. Given we are where we are and what we face, do we have any initial learnings of projects such as this and how we go from perhaps $1 million for a skate park to a near on $10 million hub, and how we control that going forward?
That's custom.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, this project has not gone from $1 million skate park facility to $8 million. The project was presented to council as part of the business case through Director's Lease area. At the time, there was indicative high-level cost estimates based on sketch designs of around $6 million. Came back to council late in 2023 in terms of a concept design through a strategy session. At the strategy session, there was specifically request by elected members to increase the scope for certain elements, and that's been incorporated in the works and has been delivered and then presented back to elected members in March 2023, I think. I can't remember the exact dates. March 23, so it was September 22, March 23, but that was presented back to elected members in terms of the overall scope and cost estimate. So those are the things that we've incorporated. Sorry, it was September 23 and March 24 through the strategy session. So those are the elements that's been incorporated. Since then, obviously, there has been a $1.1 million increase on an $8.5 million project. I have attempted to explain the difference in the cost of the independent QS versus the current contract rates. That's the market we're currently in. So the assumption that it's increased from $1 million to approximately $10 million is totally incorrect. It is actually a project that was approved by council that was more than just a skate park. It was an adventure hub, a youth facility, fully supported by council through a business case, and the design actually delivers on that.
Councillor Hattis.
Thank you for that response. Did the initial request for an item of some infrastructure in this location not commence with a request for a skate park from my colleague, and that was going to be funded from the savings from the Duncraig Leisure Centre lease transfer?
Director Lee.
Thank you for you, Mr Deputy Mayor. I'll provide more information in the pack, but from recollection, the council resolution that triggered the business case, if you like, related to the delivery of an outdoor youth recreation facility, so broader than just a skate park from recollection. And then if I can just grab the second part to your question again, if you don't mind, please, Councillor Raftus.
Councillor Raftus, what's your second part to your question?
It was merely in the funding of this was going to be from the savings from the Duncraig Leisure Centre lease transfer that were going to put into a reserve to fund this.
Trittily.
Thank you for you, Mr Deputy Mayor, and thank you for reminding me of that second part. Again, I'll provide some more information in the pack, but from recollection in the business case, it was noted that funds from that reserve would go toward the project, but I don't think it was ever intended that those reserve funds would pay for the project entirely.
Councillor Rush, is there anything else?
George, I recall a council paper on this as it was being progressed where the costing was in the vicinity of $5 to $6 million for the option that was chosen at that time. Just seeking how we then grew and how many, what were the particular options that were added in the strategy session, which is not a decision making area, to increase it from 6 to 8. Thank you.
Director Carson.
Through you, Mr Deputy Mayor. The original option, I think, as I've indicated in my previous response, was a high-level conceptual youth facility. And from memory, it was $5.7 million, and that was, as I've indicated, a high-level concept. We've presented a concept to elected members in terms of the overall design. As requested, through that feedback process, we amended the design and presented that back to elected members. As we've indicated, council approved an overall budget through the budget process of around $8.5 million. And what we're indicating to you here now is that estimate has increased to around $9.6 million overall project cost. Unfortunately, there's not much we can do about the market and the changes. But the changes over time has been based on a very high-level indicative concept to a project that's been fully costed and developed. Part of that we've included, as per the feedback and the overall development, a regional play space and the lighting infrastructure that we spoke about at with elected members.
Councillor Raftus, anything else? Maybe I'll just ask questions myself, if I may, Director Carson. So I'm just trying to understand where we are with this. So I think it's possibly unfortunate that we only had two tenderers, even though a lot of contractors downloaded the information, and that may explain why the price is a bit higher than the estimate, because there's not a whole lot of competition. If I understand correctly, what you're saying to us is that the increased cost of the tender that we're talking about here is approximately $1 million, which is approximately the cost of the grant, or the amount of the grant that we're hoping to get from federal government to finance the roller disco portion of the project. So if I understand correctly, with the $1 million increase in the tender price and the $1 million, if we're successful with the $1 million or $950,000 from the federal government, from a budget perspective, we'll be roughly in the same place that we thought we were going to be in. Is that correct? Thank you.
As I've indicated, our estimate is we'll have a shortfall just under $200,000, to be precise, around $175,000, $180,000. That's the current estimate based on that. Obviously, we're not out of the ground yet. and as I've indicated, there is a contingency amount in the project, so hopefully that will cover that. But yeah, the potential for the additional grant offsets the additional cost, yes.
Yep, and if I just put that slightly in another way and ask you to confirm if this is correct, so my understanding therefore is that if we were to withdraw the roller disco elements of the project to keep within the budget, then we'd be effectively robbing ourselves of the opportunity of getting the equivalent amount from federal funding, which would have paid for that anyway. Is that correct? Thank you.
That is correct, Mr. Deputy Mayor. It also put at risk the other grant funding and a potential reduction of the other grant funding that's already approved.
Okay, and my final question, therefore, is can you give us some indication of the level of confidence that the administration has with being successful with the federal grant for the Robo Disco element of the project? Thank you.
Mr. Deputy Mayor, in terms of that, the application process is a two-stage process, so we have been shortlisted to go through the second stage. That is as much confidence I can give you at this stage, unfortunately.
Okay, thank you. Councillors, any further questions on this item? Last call. If not, we'll move on to item 12.20, tender 12.24, processing of commingled recyclable services. Any questions on this item? Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. Just briefly, I'm trying to understand what was it that prompted Cleanaway to put in their alternate offer? Was the conforming offer the first offer they put in, and then the alternate offer was a second offer, and what prompted that second offer to come in at such a significantly reduced price?
Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'll take the question on notice to provide as much detail as I can. It's very difficult for us to say what a contractor or a tenderer might have been thinking when they put a proposal in, but generally where we see these more favourable tenders, it's because they're not providing the service exactly as we ask for it. So I will provide the details in the packs on Friday.
Councillor Kingston.
Yes, and just following up, is this a common practice? Because in a lot of the other tenders we receive, we don't receive alternate offers being put in. So I'm just trying to understand, were they put in the same day or separate? Just was there an event that prompted an alternate offer which was $3 million cheaper?
Director Humphrey.
So, Mr. Deputy Mayor, that's not something that happens on every tender, but it's certainly not uncommon. As I said, the most common cause for it, though, is where a contractor believes that they can provide us a lesser service at a drastically reduced price. But I'll take the question on notice by the details.
Councillor Kingston.
Thank you. And then just lastly, could I have the dates that all the tender offers were received on? So for all of them, for Viola and Resource Recovery as well.
Director Humphrey, do you get the question?
Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, is the question that we provide the dates that each person submitted? Through Mr. Deputy Mayor, that's not always available to us, so we don't usually get information on tenders until the closing date, and then all the tenders become available to us at the same time. That's done so that we can't see the tenders as they come in. But I will go back through the tender submission process and see if there's anything that might indicate what the dates were after we receive them.
Thank you. Elected members, any further questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Just to clarify that one there, are you indicating that there is no tender submission date on their paperwork?
Director Humphrey.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. In the old days, we had a tender box. Everyone put their tenders in the box, and then at the closing time, we would open it, and whatever was in it would be accepted. Essentially, now we have an electronic version of the same. It is possible that we will be able to get timestamps from where things were submitted, but it's not information we would normally report on or look into because we receive all the valid tenders at the same time.
Thank you. Elected members, any further questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to reports of committees. 13.1.1, this is Policy Committee. Proposed amendment to Amendment 16 to Local Planning Scheme Number 3, various public open space reserves. Councillor Chester.
Yes, thank you. I'll be as brief as I can. I had two complaints from my residents about this particular item. not about losing possible access to areas of their park or public open space, but they wanted to know why their park wasn't included in the 31 public open spaces that were identified. So the question is, look, I need to provide an answer to these people. I simply want to know how the areas, these 31 areas were chosen. Was it done by an internet survey and then followed by ground truthing? So briefly, just what was the process so I can give feedback to those residents? Thank you.
Director Lee.
Thank you, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. When we came to identifying which natural areas were included or we identified as suitable, we believe suitable for reclassification for environmental conservation, we assessed it against a number of criteria, and I'm happy to provide this to you following this evening as well so you can pass on to your to the residents that have contacted you. But we looked at the natural area classification in accordance with the city's public open space framework. We looked at ecological values such as threatened ecological communities and ecological linkages that the natural areas provided. We considered the urban planning or the town planning context of the areas insofar as how they were recognised under our local planning scheme, the metropolitan region scheme, and also if there were any existing structure plans in place. We looked as to whether or not they were classified as bush forever areas, and we also looked at the current use and activity and then also any future planned use for the areas as well. But as I said, I'm happy to provide that information in the briefing pack so that can be provided on to residents that have made that query.
Thank you for that clarity. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor.
Thirteen members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Pizzey.
Yeah, my question is on access and these areas that we want to change to environmental conservation areas and areas that have already been changed. Will residents have access to walk through those areas, and will they have access to walk through those areas with dogs on lead?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, there's probably no one single answer for each area or environmental conservation area. So some may already have fencing around it. But then also if we come to an area and we do choose to fence it, at the same time we'll be considering whether or not it's appropriate to provide access through a passive walking path, or if that particular area should be fenced off entirely. So, as I said, unfortunately, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. It will sort of depend on each area to area.
Councillor Pizzey, any further questions?
Is there... what's the criteria for fencing it off and not allowing people to walk through it?
Director Lee.
Thank you. Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if I may invite the Manager of Parks and Natural Environment or the Director of Infrastructure Services, he might be better placed to answer that question.
Director Customer, Mr. Humley.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, based on the ecological values of the natural area and also where we believe we're getting degradation through pedestrian traffic, we'll look at those parks to decide whether it needs a... conservation fencing. We would probably look in the end trying to fence them off over the years based on our capital works projects. As far as pathways, if there's already an identified pathway which we can facilitate for that to continue, we will do that, but we'll normally put a pedestrian gate or some sort of gate there to restrict access.
Councillor Pizzey, anything further?
Do you think if residents have used an area, they have a greater intention than to want to preserve it and care for it rather than fencing them off and not allowing them in there, then they don't have any, as much of a need to protect it and to keep it preserved?
So I'm mindful about question. Our answers to questions are opinion or facts. That's a request to be cautious in answering the question. Thank you.
Mr. Hamlin?
Yeah, through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. We'll definitely look at, first off, the classification of how it sits in our public open space framework, and then we'll just have a look at, normally our higher conservation areas already have friends groups working with them in those areas. And secondly, it all depends on the team when they look at it, if there's any degradation and so forth as far as access with kids building BMX tracks and so forth through there. So we don't want to close spaces off. We prefer to have path networks through there. Sometimes it's difficult to have that, but also we've put gates in place so we get access, and also we've actually in the past liaised with residents, so if they are doing work like going in and picking up rubbish and doing some hand weeding, we'll be able to have access through our natural areas teams.
Councillor Pizzey, anything further? Got two members. Any further questions on this item? Councillor O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. I'm just wondering if it's possible within this to maybe put like a caveat in there also, that there's no fencing around these areas regardless whether they are approved or not.
Director Carson?
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, if Councillor O'Neill is asking if we can prepare an alternate, we can, or an amendment. However, some of these areas are already fenced. Some of these areas are already fenced as it's protected, and therefore they've been identified because it's already protected, and it might be pockets that are fenced, etc. I would advise against a condition like that. I think, as Mr. Hamlin has indicated, it's done on a case by case basis based on how we protect the natural area. The objective is and that's like most natural areas. If people can't use and access it, it makes it really difficult for people to really value those areas. So you still need to provide access and usability, but as Mr. Hamling has indicated, on a case by case basis.
Councillor O'Neill.
Yeah, thank you. Just further to that point, who makes the decision on that case-by-case basis whether they needed to be fenced off? I understand that ones that have the fencing on it already, probably, you know, best to leave, but who makes the decision within the city on that case-by-case basis? Are they qualified to make that decision in terms of biodiverse environments and things like that?
Thank you. Mr. Hamling.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor, our natural areas team will first of all look at the natural areas in conjunction with the strategic environmental arm with Rebecca's team. We'll talk through the impacts of what's going on within those natural areas, and then they will decide based on environmental condition, biodiversity and degradation whether they should be considered for fencing, and then we'll go through the capital works program.
Councillor O'Neill.
Yes, thank you. Just one more. So am I clear that it doesn't have to come back to council for an explanation as to this one's getting fenced off and that one's not?
Mr. Hamlin. Address Carson.
Through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Not specifically in that sense, but as Ms. Hamlin has indicated, Councillor O'Neill, annually through the capital works program, we identify those push-on areas that we're going to fence, and that's where we'll have a discussion with the ward councils at the ward meetings and the budget workshops.
Two members, any further questions on this item? Councillor Hutton.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. There was a discussion in a previous strategy session about having the list of parks split out from those that are adjacent to sporting fields and those that are not adjacent to sporting fields. I'm wondering if that could happen, and if when we get to this we could vote on those two separate components separately.
Question to Director Lee. I'm not sure if that's a strategy session or a policy committee meeting. Thank you.
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, that was a question that came up at the recent policy committee meeting. We did have a look, and there aren't any current playing fields identified for expansion that would be impacted by the natural areas subject to this amendment. So rather than going through the exercise of splitting them out, we did undertake the exercise to review which natural areas may be potentially affected or by future playing field expansions, and our the outcome of that work was that there we don't believe there are any potential impacted, so we didn't prepare a map to split them out, because essentially we were of a view that there weren't any.
Thank you, Professor Lee. Councillor Hutton?
Yeah, just to clarify that, if I interpret that correctly, you're saying that there's no current plans to expand. My question was around breaking the ones adjacent, because plans in the future, we do not know what plans would be in the future. So again, that was the basis of it. I guess I'm still wondering if they could be... I take on board what you've said, but I'm still wondering if they could be broken out.
Director Lee?
Thank you through you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. Yes, we're happy to go through the ones that are being recommended for inclusion into the Environmental Conservation Reserve, which ones are adjoining or adjacent existing playing fields, and then it may be a case that once we've done that, we can work with you, Councillor Hutton, if it was a case that you're looking to create an alternate that splits those out. I just want to ensure that if we are developing an alternate, we're including the right ones for you. So happy to do that preliminary bit of work and then work with you on an alternate.
Well, that's all for questions on this item, councillors. If not, we'll move on to item 13.1.2, Records Management Council Policy. Councillors, any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 13.1.3, Freedom of Information Disclosure Board. Councillors, any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 13.1.4, Council Members Library. Any questions on this item? If not, we'll move on to item 13.1.5, Visual Art Review. Councillors, any questions on this item? That's a no. I just asked the Acting CEO, are there any further reports of committees for the forthcoming Council meeting?
Mr. Deputy Mayor, no. Only the items from the Policy Committee are expected to go to this Council meeting.
That being the items that we just discussed. Okay, we'll move on to item 14, reports of the CEO. Could I just ask the Acting CEO if there are any reports from the CEO?
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Mayor. At this time, no.
Thank you. Item 15 is urgent business. This item will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on 27th of August 2024. Item 16 is motions of which previous notice has been given. We have notice of motion 1 from Councillor O'Neill, privacy and responsible information sharing. Are there any elected members who wish to flag their intent to raise an additional notice of motion for the next council meeting? If not, we'll move on to item 17, announcements of notices of motion for the next meeting. This item will be dealt with at the ordinary council meeting to be held on 27th of August 2024. We move on to item 18. That concludes tonight's briefing session. I hereby close the meeting at 10:03 p.m. Thank you and good evening.